Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Now, there has been a lot of discussion this year of the lasting impact of colonialism around the world. Here in Britain now, the charity Historic Royal Palaces, which looks after six properties owned by the Queen, is creating a new post aimed at telling the stories of colonialism and exploitation that have formed part of the site's history. The curator of inclusive history will also highlight the contribution made by different ethnic groups to the royal palaces. Sangeeta Maiska reports.
Historic royal palaces look after six of the country's most famous sites, including the Tower of London, Hillsborough Castle and Hampton Court Palace. The properties are owned by the Queen, but held in trust for the nation. The charity says the new curator of inclusive history will lead a team of historians to uncover aspects of the property's past that have been unexplored or need highlighting. An example that they point to is the story of the black trumpeter John Blank, who in 1511 served at the court of King Henry VIII. An ambitious young man, he wrote to the king asking for a promotion and equal pay to his white counterparts. John Blank was granted his wish and his salary doubled to 16 pence a day. The musician became so beloved by Henry that when he married, he was given a gown of velvet and a hat as a gift. Applications for the role of curator of inclusive history, which has a £38,000 salary, will close on November the 1st.
That was Sangeeta Maiska reporting on the life of John Blank, a trumpeter in the royal court of King Henry VIII, which has got me thinking, I need a trumpeter.
Carry me back to old Virginia. There's where the cotton and the corn and taters grow. There's where the birds warble sweet in the springtime. There's where the old darkest heart am long to go. There's where I labored so hard for old massa, day after day in a field of yellow corn. No place on earth do I love more sincerely than old Virginia, the state where I was born. Carry me back to old Virginia.
Tonight we're hearing from alumni for the first time since Virginia Military Institute announced some major changes after calls for social justice. The Institute plans to remove a Confederate statue of Stonewall Jackson and work to improve diversity and inclusion on post. 10 News reporter Lindsay Kennett explains why the move is getting mixed reaction.
It's just amazing.
Virginia Military Institute is removing a symbol of its history, the Stonewall Jackson Monument, on post, a weight off Caleb Tucker's shoulders.
Crazy to actually be witnessing and this change is happening right in front of your eyes.
Tucker started an online petition after he graduated from VMI in May, asking the school to remove the statue and address racism, something he experienced firsthand.
I was called the N-word all throughout VMIs.
Senior cadet William Bunton says systemic racism at the school lives in symbols, just like the statue and the Confederate general's image on his class ring.
We're going through society brainwashed that these things are normal. This is normalized, and it shouldn't be.
Those on the other side of the issue say the monument carries a different meaning.
It represents the heritage of VMI.
Jeremy Sanders graduated from VMI in 2015 and started an opposing petition to defend the Jackson Monument, calling the board's decision disappointing and an act of shameless cowardice.
I'm not saying that there's not individual acts of racism, because unfortunately, there are evil and corrupt people wherever you go. Saying that the entire school and painting the entire school that way is an injustice to the school.
2015 VMI grad Kwan Kanhansuk, originally from Thailand, says he's sad to hear that some of his fellow cadets felt victimized by racism, but he did not have the same experience.
Keeping the statue or taking it down is it's not going to make anything like different.
Sanders is asking alumni to voice their concerns and pull their donations. But for these Black cadets and alumni, they hope this is just the start.
I hope and pray it's not sort of like appeasement, and I hope it's a true commitment to change.
In Lexington, Lindsay Kennett, 10 News, working for you.
Never I say, for the Ku Klux Klan is here to stay. Never I say, because the Ku Klux Klan is here to stay.
The art world is in upheaval over the cancellation of a show by four major museums. It was to include the work of the late Philip Guston. Some of his images include a series of hooded Klan-like figures, and though he was known for tackling racism in his work, at this tumultuous moment, the museums backed away from mounting an exhibition planned years ago. Emma Jacobs has more.
Philip Guston was born Philip Goldstein in Canada to Ukrainian Jewish immigrants. His family moved to Los Angeles, where he encountered Klan members breaking up labor strikes in the 1920s. That led to paintings of hooded figures Guston would make in the 1930s and return to three decades later. He discussed them in a documentary called Philip Guston, A Life Lived, with filmmaker Michael Blackwood.
Gradually, these hooded figures started coming in like dumb human beings who were always covered, committing these senseless acts. It felt right to me.
But it apparently didn't feel right now, to the four museums that co-sponsored the exhibition: the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., the Tate Modern in London, and the Boston and Houston Museums of Fine Art. So they announced it would be postponed for 4 years.
It's the one thing that could get me out of the house during COVID, is to really go and see that work.
Trenton Doyle Hancock is an acclaimed artist himself, who also wrote an essay for the exhibition catalog.
You know, I'm a Black guy that was shown that work and jumped right in and swam. And it was perfectly okay with me, but it's hard for me to speak for someone else.
Last month, the museums released a statement saying they were postponing the exhibition so that the work's message of social and racial justice, quote, can be more clearly interpreted, unquote. This set off a huge argument in the art world.
From the conversations I had at the beginning, people I knew, artists and not artists, critics, historians, people who work in museums and galleries, were all appalled.
Rachel Harrison was one of nearly 100 art world figures, multi-generational and some artists of color, who signed a letter protesting the preemptive cancellation. The letter said the museums, quote, fear controversy, unquote, and showed a lack of faith in their audience's ability to understand the work's message about white culpability. In the later paintings and drawings, the Klan figures are buffoonish, shown doing everyday things like driving a car or painting.
I think it sets a really bad precedent, and I think there will be a ripple effect that confirms what's already a trend in museums in America, which is to avoid complexity and ambiguity in art.
A number of other artists who signed the letter declined to be interviewed. Last year, Darren Walker became the first African-American trustee in the history of the National Gallery of Art. He's also the head of the Ford Foundation, a funder of NPR. He agrees that Guston's themes are especially relevant now, but he says an exhibition planned years ago can't possibly account for what's going on outside museum walls today.
White supremacy and white supremacist ideology are being discussed at the highest levels in our society and are being normalized by some.
All four curators who collaborated on the exhibition are white. The director of the National Gallery, Kaywin Feldman, says the museum felt it needed more time to reconsider how it will present the images and to hold conversations with people inside and outside the museums.
It's not about being risk averse. It's being answerable to our publics. In the past, it sort of assumed that museums would do the research and put the shows up and people would just accept it. And we are seeing in modern America that the public really wants to have a voice. They want to be involved.
For his part, artist Trenton Doyle Hancock is disappointed the show won't be coming to Houston, where he lives, for quite a while. He notes museums have had decades to figure out how to present Guston's work, which was never easy to talk about.
It's hard to talk about by design. It's why he made the work. And that, to me, is the reason to talk about the work. It's like, why would someone approach such complicated imagery and deal with it in this very strange, nonlinear fashion?
But he says he's also seen images misinterpreted or get co-opted in what he calls this crazy time.
It could have been a great teaching tool, and people could have come to it with open eyes and had a great conversation about it. But I also have to look at the worst case scenario around it.
He'd still like to hear those conversations today, but he's afraid they won't be any less relevant in 4 years. For NPR News, I'm Emma Jacobs.
Mama, is Master gonna sell us tomorrow? Yes, yes, yes. Mama, is Master gonna sell us tomorrow? Yes, yes, yes.
From Richmond to San Francisco, historical monuments have been taken down, painted over, as a new generation grapples with America's complicated past. One northern Kentucky town is currently putting up a mural of the city's founder. He was also a slave owner. As Sherry Lawson of member station WEKU reports, many residents are just now learning about him and wrestling with what to do.
On a recent afternoon along the Ohio River in northern Kentucky, artist Gina Erardi works with a group of volunteers in Newport. They're painting bold colors of blue, green, and teal to a mural depicting the city's founder, General James Taylor, and his wife, Keturah.
The whole mural without getting a drop anywhere else.
The public art is celebrating the city's 225th anniversary and will eventually showcase parts of its history with a series of murals. 23-year-old Erardi is the lead artist and mural designer. She says Taylor was a wealthy young man who was able to create a vision for the city. She says he invested in schools, roads, dams, and a significant military barracks pictured in the design. Erardi says he also was a slave owner.
I was worried about it, but I knew that this person was an important part of the story of Newport, and the goal of this project in a whole is not just to put up a memorial of this person, but to honor the entire city's history. So it seemed like it made sense.
This mural is about 37 feet long and 20 feet tall with a large image of the Taylors. It's designed so it appears they're looking into the future. It is a fact that Taylor owned slaves, says Newport Assistant City Manager Larissa Sims, but she says that's not what the city is commemorating.
General Taylor and his wife, we're memorializing them for their contributions to the founding of Newport. And in the year that's Newport's 225th anniversary, we feel like that's appropriate.
That makes sense to genealogist Julie Smith Morrow. The 70-year-old lives a few blocks from the flood wall where the murals are being painted.
I think that it is wonderful that he's being represented as a leader in the founding of this community. I don't think that we should try to pretend to rewrite history.
The flood wall is located in an area of high visibility. Jerome Bowles is president of the Northern Kentucky branch of the NAACP. He says Newport is marketing itself as a welcoming city. He doesn't think putting up a mural of General James Taylor sends the right message.
You have to be very, very careful with images like this that can potentially cause conflict with the message you're trying to send to the world. You know, because that can be very painful to a lot of individuals, not only African Americans, but majority community as well.
Activist Chris Brown says paying homage to Taylor in a mural is not okay because he owned human beings.
And now you're going to paint a mural so that all of the people of color can drive past and look at the man who once owned their great, 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 greats. It is offensive. It is ridiculous. And it needs to not happen.
History is complicated, says Katie Bramall. She's with the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center in Cincinnati. She says it's hard to include context in public art like a mural.
What's interesting about this piece is it's new. Most of these conversations have been around things that were put up 100 to 50 to 60 years ago. But I think that we just need to, again, pause and think and try to do better, because I think the time has come to where we have to.
For now, the plan is to have the mural honoring General Taylor ready for the city's 225th anniversary in December. For NPR News, I'm Sherry Lawson in Newport, Kentucky.
There's a conspiracy theory sweeping the globe that coronavirus
is caused by 5G technology.
The theory is that 5G damages the human immune system.
All of us should know what's taking place right under our noses.
What 5G actually does, it absorbs oxygen, and that's really important to know.
5G gets switched on, people drop like flies, and all of a sudden you've got the excuse because, well, there's a virus going on.
Some people in the UK bought into it so much they started lighting cell phone towers on fire.
5G burning.
Let's dive deeper into concerns around spreading misinformation, its consequences, and securing our votes. Some of the most pointed attacks during today's Senate hearing included examples of how the leading social media platforms have been used to spread misinformation. William Brangham explores how that misinformation can be transmitted easily by American voters and influence thinking. Afterwards, he has an interview with one of the top officials from the Department of Homeland Security.
Thank you so much.
Have you heard that voter fraud is rampant in the U.S.? Well, it isn't. Or that Bill Gates is going to microchip Americans using the COVID-19 vaccine? That's also false. Or that President Trump didn't really have the coronavirus? Wrong. He did. None of these are true, but they've been read and spread by millions. And they represent just drops in a vast ocean of misinformation.
Good morning, everybody. Have a busy day.
It's become such a pervasive problem that a small industry of fact-checkers, like the people here at PolitiFact, is working overtime to debunk them.
And Amy has a good fact-check on whether Biden is a socialist or supports socialist policies.
All the major social media platforms are trying to flag false or misleading claims posted on their sites. There are online courses teaching citizens how to distinguish truth from fiction.
And try to think what your inherent biases or lenses might be that are causing you to see news in a certain way.
We sat in on one for senior citizens run by a group called Senior Planet.
So it really impacts everybody when people disseminate fake news.
People who are susceptible to misinformation includes anyone who has a pre-existing opinion about anything. So anyone.
Danigal Young of the University of Delaware studies misinformation. She says the pandemic has only made it worse.
When you think about this in terms of evolutionary psychology, we are hardwired for survival, especially when we are under conditions that mimic fear and threat. So, you know, if you are encountering a tiger in the jungle or something, you're not going to do a slow pro-con list of the different courses of action that you might take. Instead, you're actually just going to make a decision quickly based on emotions and intuition, and the person who writes the pro-con list will be eaten by the tiger.
You suspect that there's some foul play going on there?
On the issue of the pandemic, retired veteran Kel Bales from Wisconsin has real questions about whether the official coronavirus death toll is accurate.
I feel strongly that there's a lot of political motivation behind a lot of these kind of numbers being pushed out there.
Bales is an ordained pastor and a supporter of President Trump. In his media ecosystem, which is largely conservative voices, anything but a Trump win would be evidence of foul play.
If Biden were to win the presidency, seems to be pretty clear evidence of fraud. We're all skewed, right? My particular Facebook feed is blown up with conservative, with like-minded individuals. We're all going to do that. We're going to surround ourselves with circles of like believers, like thinkers.
I don't listen to any regular TV news because it's not telling everything out there.
Arlene LeHue lives in the Villages in Florida. It's a large retirement community. She's a grandmother and enjoys riding motorcycles.
I go online to Newsmax, Parler. I follow Dan Bongino.
So those are all fairly what people would argue are conservative news sites or from a right perspective.
Yeah, I don't agree with it. I just feel it's truthful. I don't know if it's conservative or not. I think people that are on the Democratic side, and I used to be a Democrat, so people that are on the Democratic side don't really want to hear the truth sometimes.
Misinformation is nothing new, of course. Abe Lincoln back there, as with every other president, has been tarred with all sorts of lies and untruths. The difference is that back then, the misinformation could only travel as fast as the railroads could take it. Nowadays, all you need is a few seconds, and it's everywhere. Kelbales shares posts to his Facebook page, like this video of President Trump falsely alleging that there's widespread fraud with mail-in ballots.
This election will be the most rigged election in history.
When you look at all these organizations that say that there might be incredibly rare instances of people casting votes illegally, but it's 0.00000% of votes cast. That doesn't give you any comfort.
Again, if we look at the numbers, if that's truly the number out there, I'll have to again do my own research. I mean, I'm sure there are independent organizations out there doing the research, and that's great. I applaud them for it. But ultimately, again, it's that my personal gut check.
They found a lot of ballots, like in the ocean and trunks and garbage cans. Dead people are getting ballots. Animals are getting ballots. My friend got one from a dog down the street. His dog's name's Charlie. He got a ballot.
His dog was mailed a ballot?
Yes. Well, his name's Charlie, the dog. So it's Charlie, whatever their last name is, and he got a ballot.
It may sound preposterous, and of course pets can't vote, but often misinformation starts with a kernel of truth. One voting group did mistakenly mail a registration form to a deceased cat in Atlanta. But Danigel Young says fact-checking alone isn't likely to address this ocean of misinformation.
If you can connect on the very needs and desires that are driving people to hold these beliefs in the first place, right, create those connections, that's where we create an inroad. It's hard because, you know, we're asking you to have empathy for individuals who might be holding beliefs that could undermine your own freedom or undermine certain aspects of social justice. But this, if the goal is to correct misperceptions, then those relationships have to come first.
Hear these words. You will never be ignored again. Your voice, your hopes, and your dreams will define our American destiny. And your courage and goodness and love will forever guide us along the way. Together, we will make America strong again. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless America.
Have you read the latest poll, seen those endless lines to vote, woken up in the middle of the night, worried about what happens if your candidate doesn't win? Two-thirds of Americans are stressed about the upcoming elections, according to a recent survey. NPR's Ritu Chatterjee talked to people about what they're feeling and how to cope.
Shortly after the 2016 elections, Adrian Deckman started having panic attacks.
I was like hypervigilant and with a rapid heartbeat and palpitations, and I couldn't sleep, and I was just like highly distracted all the time.
Deckman is 67 years old, a lawyer, and lives outside Cleveland, Ohio. She says the upcoming elections and the isolation from the pandemic have worsened her panic attacks. And she's exhausted by the political climate, which has affected people's interaction in her own community.
I'm tired of people screaming at each other in parking lots and threatening each other and spitting on each other.
Deckman's a Democrat, but Cassandra Dietman, an independent voter in Mount Lake Terrace, Washington, also shares those sentiments.
Seeing everyone just shut down and not listen to each other and not sit down and have conversations with each other, it's really disheartening and painful.
In Fairfax, Virginia, Republican Jean Toussaint has similar feelings about the current political climate.
I am concerned that the country needs healing because the climate is rather foul at times.
Toussaint says he's hopeful about the elections, but he admits that sometimes he does get a little stressed.
Every now and then, I get a little stomach tie up.
His main worry is what happens if Republicans don't win by a landslide.
If we don't get a landslide, if this is contested, I am concerned that we could have upheaval.
Stress about the elections is a bipartisan problem, says Vail Wright.
It cuts across party lines, where we see the majority of Democrats, Republicans, and independents reporting high levels of stress related to the upcoming election.
Wright is with the American Psychological Association and was involved with the survey.
77% of adults said that the future of our nation is the source of stress.
And the stress is unlikely to go down come election night, says psychologist Lean Bufka, who's also with the American Psychological Association. Bufka says it's important to expect that there may not be a clear outcome right away.
If we're expecting a clear answer and we don't have it, that just extends the uncertainty for us.
And uncertainty causes stress. She says it's also important to plan how to spend one's time waiting for those results. If you know watching TV, scanning the news is stressful, she says, don't do it. Instead, do something relaxing.
So find things that tend to keep you less distressed and less overwhelmed, and make a plan to do those things.
Like taking a walk with a friend, or going on a bike ride, or reading a book. Making a plan in times of uncertainty, she says, can give us a sense of control, which cuts down on stress. Then there are some simple, healthy habits that can buffer against stress, says psychologist Vail Wright.
We need to be eating healthy. We need to really be getting the right amount of sleep. We need to be staying active. That can mean even just going for a walk.
And disconnect from the news every now and then, she says, and rekindle your social connections. That's what Dalen Allen has found most helpful.
I've kind of backed away from the news slowly but surely, kind of give myself some peace of mind and to kind of focus on what I can do to prepare myself for either outcome.
He's reading books, listening to more music, and investing in his personal relationships.
Talk to my family and friends, giving them calls, check-ins, calling people for their birthday instead of giving them texts. That's been really helpful for me to kind of manage that stress.
The new survey also found that the majority of Americans remain hopeful about the future despite all the stress. Rita Chatterjee, NPR News.
So, you know, these events that keep coming up, instead of just reacting, dealing with them one at a time and being shocked each time we have another event that surfaces that is brought to our attention, we need to function from the position of an analysis that clarifies we are in a total system structure of racism, white supremacy, and that is why we are seeing the kinds of behaviors from individuals, be it Donald Sterling or be it George Zimmerman or any of the other cases that come to our attention. There is a reason that these cases exist. And I want to also talk about, in this case, they talked about mental health, but also gun control. And we have to begin to understand, I say you can't understand the gun mania if you don't understand racism, white supremacy. The gun is the answer to conscious and or subconscious, the answer, the response to the white collective feeling they can be genetically annihilated by black genetic material. And the gun is a great equalizer. I encourage everybody to get a copy of the ISIS papers and read.
To Michigan now, where a legal fight over whether guns can be openly carried at polling places on Election Day is once again heating up. Michigan's Secretary of State and Attorney General say guns can be intimidating, especially in a contentious election. Gun rights advocates say the state cannot step on a right that is guaranteed under state law. From Michigan Public Radio, Rick Pluto reports.
Michigan is an open carry state, which means most people can carry a gun in open view without a license. There are exceptions. Schools and churches, for example, can forbid them. Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson says she can ban openly carried firearms at polling places.
The polling place is a sanctuary for democracy.
Benson says it's about guaranteeing everyone the right to vote without fear of coercion or intimidation.
And I, as the chief election officer, and we, with law enforcement, have every responsibility and obligation to ensure the calmness and the sanctity of that precinct, that polling place, is protected and that voters' fundamental right to vote is unfettered.
But gun rights advocates say Benson is going too far, that she can't use a generalized concern about a possible threat to stop residents from exercising a right. Tom Lambert is with the group Michigan Open Carry.
While Ms. Benson may have some personal misgivings about firearms, superimposing those misgivings onto every person with a firearm and claiming that that person is inherently engaging in voter intimidation is asinine.
On Tuesday, a Michigan Court of Claims judge agreed, ruling that if Benson wanted to ban open carry, she should have gone through the state's formal rulemaking process instead of waiting until Election Day is around the corner. Benson says she would have acted sooner if she had been aware of growing threats at the polls. The organization Militia Watch identifies Michigan, along with Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Oregon, as states with a higher risk of armed militias attempting interference with elections.
The unexpected always happens on Election Day, and I'm sure that this is the case for this election more than any other that we've had.
Wendy Williams is training to be a poll worker in Flint and says she'd like to know what the rules will be, how they'll be enforced, and what will be expected of people whose jobs are typically limited to checking voter IDs, not enforcing firearms bans.
It's concerning, of course, but I kind of consider it an act of patriotism to safeguard the polls, to be there, to try and make sure that this goes through in a fair way for everyone, no matter their affiliation.
State Attorney General Dana Nessel is appealing Tuesday's court ruling, which is on a fast track to reach the Michigan Supreme Court.
We will have this resolved by November 3rd, and we will make it clear exactly what the rules are and are not prior to people going into the polls on that particular day.
And the nation is watching what happens in Michigan. Most states have no laws regarding guns in polling places because, for the most part, they haven't really needed to make them. Today, 14 states and the District of Columbia filed a brief with Michigan's Court of Appeals, supporting the position that bringing guns into polling places is intimidating and should not be allowed. For NPR News, I'm Rick Pluta.
I say you can't understand the gun mania if you don't understand racism and white supremacy.
On the commercial strips in some American cities, little signs of tension have appeared this week. Shop managers in Washington, D.C. and a few other places boarded up windows just in case of election violence. Of course, nobody knows that anything will happen. In the swing state of Wisconsin, the state attorney general is hoping for a boring election day. But Josh Call, our next guest, says he's ready if it's not boring. Call is a Democrat. His state faced protests and shootings in Kenosha this past summer and is a hard-fought state now. He's one of 36 state attorneys general from both parties who signed a bipartisan statement on elections. They committed to ensuring every eligible person can vote and that every vote is counted.
Voter intimidation is a crime in Wisconsin. If you use force or threaten to use force to prevent somebody from voting, or if you put somebody in a state of duress to prevent them from voting, that's a felony. And if people commit that crime, they should be prepared to be investigated and to spend time behind bars.
I'm getting the impression that if a group of people were standing in a particular way outside of a polling place so that voters felt like they had to run a gauntlet to get in there, that is something that you have the power to stop.
That's right. Any voter intimidation case would depend on the specific facts of the incident. But if, a group of people is standing, attempting to be imposing and putting fear in voters, that does cross the line, and people should expect a law enforcement response if that happens.
Have you discussed among law enforcement agencies the possibility of worse disruptions?
We do a few different things to prepare for potentially worse disruptions. One is we staff the Wisconsin Statewide Intelligence Center, which shares information among federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. And if there is a threat to the safety or security of Wisconsinites, that agency gets the information to the other relevant agencies in Wisconsin. And if there were a concentrated effort to interfere with the election, whether by a foreign actor or by a group in the United States, they would take action.
Has your intelligence gathering network brought back any information about threats of violence on Election Day or afterward?
In terms of violent threats, there aren't any specific threats that I'm aware of in the state of Wisconsin. But if we do become aware of those threats, we would contact the relevant law enforcement agencies and take action.
And are you confident that law enforcement agencies in your state, in this circumstance where everybody in the country, it seems, is being asked or told to choose sides, that they will be impartial and enforce the law fairly for everyone?
I am confident about that. We, this election, having a free and fair election, is vital to our democratic process. And if anybody intimidates voters, they're not only committing a crime, they are attacking fair elections.
The president has publicly urged his supporters to go to the polls and watch for what he says would be fraud. What advice would you give to his supporters who want to follow that direction? And what advice do you give to everybody else?
Well, first, it's important to note that the president's statements about fraud are just totally false. Fraud is extremely rare. And in Wisconsin, our system has been tested repeatedly. We also have open and transparent elections in the state, and people are able to go to the polls and observe the process. What's critical is that word observe. People can observe what's going on when they're there as observers, but what they cannot do is be participants in the process when they're observing. They can't interfere with voters. They can't disrupt the process. And if they do, election officials around the state are being informed that they have the option then to remove those folks from polling places.
I'm curious, having voted in the past in, school gymnasiums, community centers, if you showed up at a polling place and wanted to observe in Wisconsin, where can you stand? Can you look over my shoulder, across the room, outside the building? What?
There are designated areas in polling places in Wisconsin where the observers can stand, and those will be marked out at each polling place. There's some distance required between where the observers stand and where the voters check in and where the process happens. But there is an orderly process, and not only are there people who just decide on their own to observe, but there are a variety of organizations that are regularly involved in observing the election process, nonpartisan organizations, for example.
I want to ask about the federal aspect of this. Of course, the Justice Department oversees the FBI, who you mentioned. William Barr, the Attorney General of the United States, has mentioned mail-in ballot fraud. The issue that you just pointed out correctly is completely false and unfounded. It's exceedingly rare, and it's hard to figure out how it would work. But Barr has said, including in an interview on this program, that it seems obvious that it could happen. Do you have confidence that Attorney General Barr will play his role in this election in a fair and impartial and reality-based way?
Well, I have no confidence in Attorney General Barr. He's made false statements, including this false statement about mail-in ballots, when the reality is that we've had mail-in balloting for multiple elections, and that process has worked out well. What I do have confidence in is the people who work at federal agencies across the country who are not partisan and haven't approached the job the way that AG Barr has, but are committed to keeping our communities safe and protecting fair elections. And so we've had an effective working relationship with federal agencies in Wisconsin and agencies that work in other states as well. And I expect that cooperative relationship to continue.
What would you say to Americans who think about the post-election period and fear violence, that whoever's side loses, somebody there might not accept it and might resort to extreme acts?
It's important to note that we have a fair and transparent process in place. So the results that we get will be the results that reflect the will of the voters. It is absolutely people's right to peacefully protest those results. They can protest the process itself. But what is unacceptable is for people to engage in violence or destruction or to attempt to intimidate voters or election officials. Because once people have crossed that line, they are then trying to prevent a fair outcome to this election. As I mentioned, there are discussions going on to make sure that our polling places are safe on Election Day. We're also prepared for the possibility of unrest in the wake of the election. But, I encourage people to, if they want to have their voices heard, to do so peacefully. And it's important that they know that they can have confidence that we're going to fight to make sure every vote is counted.
Attorney General Josh Call of Wisconsin, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Beyond the polls. In a few days, the roiling elections of 2020 will be history. But what kind of history will it be? No one really knows. For certainty is but a feeling, not a fact. But what about the polls, you ask? Polls are Poles, and 2016 had the same sense of certainty, and somewhat similar polls. Thanks in part to the then director of the FBI, James Comey. A news release made just days before the election sent Hillary Clinton's campaign into a tailspin. She crashed and burned, leading to the unexpected rise of Trump. Given the speed and the power of social media, anything can happen in the blink of an eye. So the stage is not yet set. Tomorrow's script is not yet written. People vote, yes, but it ain't the voting that matters. It's the counting, especially in a so-called democracy. For tomorrow belongs to those who fight the hardest today. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Together, we will make America great again.
If you're going to vote by mail, vote early.
But you don't hear them talking about COVID. I saved hundreds of thousands of lives.
The only thing you can tear America apart is America itself, and we cannot let that happen.
We're 9 days out from the U.S. election, and during our Road to November series, we have traveled all along the Mississippi River. Our guests are regular voters, no pundits, no politicians. Instead, it's the pastor, the mechanic, the barbecue pit master. And the goal here is to get a small glimpse at what this election means to everyday Americans. Today, we've rolled the radio RV into Arkansas and gone a little further from the river's edge than normal. 4 hours west of the Mississippi, nestled in the Ozarks, is a little manufacturing town called Harrison. By all accounts, it is very much the idyllic rural American town. But, of course, nothing is ever perfect.
Harrison, Arkansas is the most racist town in the United States.
Animal pride, you're right, brother! Black pride, worldwide!
Are you a Marxist?
Communist!
Domestic terrorist. All lives matter, not just black.
That is a small portion of a viral video from this summer. A filmmaker stood outside a local Walmart holding a Black Lives Matter sign and hit record. And what you heard are some of the very few moments we could play on the radio. Everything else shows people driving by, yelling racist comments, or threatening the filmmaker's life. For years, Harrison has been affiliated with white supremacy, thanks largely to the national director of the Ku Klux Klan living nearby. But a two-minute video doesn't always give the full picture of a town and the people who live there, so we thought we'd go back to Harrison, now that some time has passed, and hear what people think.
We're not the most racist town in America, and so it hurt, and it hurt deeply. It made me mad a little bit, and embarrassment that somebody would drive by this guy and say some of the things that were heard on the video.
I think it's more a thing of the past, and there's a couple old people still bringing it up and causing a problem.
I've lived here my whole life, and I have not had to deal with racism. Also, I'm white female, so I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but it's not as bad as it's portrayed to be, definitely.
I'll say this about Harrison and racism. It's been known as a racist place, in fact, most racist place in the country for a long time, mainly because of the Klan. But this is what people don't realize. There's racism all over the place. Harrison is like a patsy in a way. You can make a case for a lot more places that are a lot more racist than Harrison. You see black people here and people of other races all the time walking the streets. Not in no danger at all. At worst, they may get a little dirty look. That's it, every once in a while.
They've had several Black Lives Matter protests down here, and they went very smoothly. There were no problems whatsoever, and they had plenty of support. I was actually at the first one, and there were tons of vehicles driving by and honking, so they definitely had support from people in the town.
I live here 16 years. Not once I have experienced racism, and I'm always felt loved.
The last voice you heard there is that of Freddie Mendez. He owns HPO Detailing and Power Washing in Harrison, and Freddie's with me now. Freddie, good morning.
Hey, how you doing today?
When that video went around for the first time, what did you make of it?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, actually the first day that was posted, I got a phone call from a lady in Florida. And she told me that that video was showing the address of my detail shop. And she sent, and I said, will you please send me the link? And she did. She said it was on YouTube. And she went ahead and sent me the video. And I went ahead and looked at it, watched it, the whole thing. And I'm like, I just can't believe this. You know, I was shocked that somebody took the time to come to our town and actually make a video to try to make our town look racist.
Your auto detailing shop shares a parking lot with a couple of billboards, and I've seen a photo of this. One of the billboards reads White Pride Radio and Alt-Right TV, and the other is a billboard for a guy, he's an attorney named Jason Robb, who on Twitter declares himself as a white nationalist that believes the protection and preservation of his people. What is it like to see those signs every day?
I don't really, you know, that don't bother me none. I think when it comes down to, the reason it doesn't bother me, you know, is because I know what our town is like. I know how our town behaves and acts towards people who are, you know, from a different ethnicity, race, per se. And so, you know, the only thing that bothers me is when people stop in my parking lot and start taking pictures. Mm. And this happens almost daily anymore. So...
You're not white, but you live in and work in this town that, as we heard, is called the most racist town in America. In that video, that little clip that we played, you were saying that you don't really experience racism. Do you think you're an outlier in that experience? I mean, tell me a little bit more about what it's like not to be white, but living in a town that's been called, as I say, the most racist town in America.
Okay, I can tell you this. I've been here. I moved here about 15 years ago. My kids were small. I have two daughters. They were little. And I was a little hesitant because, you know, that's what I heard when I first moved here. So I didn't even send my kids to public school because I was afraid they were going to have to go through what I went through growing up in the state of Virginia. Well, that's where I actually grew up at.
And what did you face in Virginia?
You know, I was, it was the town that I was, I grew up in. I mean, I was, you know, it was pretty racist and I was pretty, I was getting beat up all the time and call names, all that stuff for being Hispanic. So we put them in private school, then the private school shut down and, make story short, we had to put them in public school, but really we had never experienced, any racism at all. My kids or I. In this community. In fact, I'm very well known in this community, and I got nothing but love.
This is an election that's coming after people have been talking a lot about racism. And I mean, your town gets some of that discussion, but there has been this uprising around anti-black racism and racial justice across the United States and elsewhere as well. Are those issues influencing your vote this year in the election?
You know, I mean, my vote's already been set for a long time. I will do the same thing as I did last time and vote for who I feel is the best candidate for our country.
Do you mind me asking who you're voting for?
Yeah, I'm voting for Donald Trump.
And you voted for him 4 years ago as well?
Yes, I did.
What is it about Donald Trump that you think is qualifies him as the best person to lead your country right now?
You know, he's pretty much the most honest person I ever know. He tells you like it is. And that's the thing. A lot of people don't like him because his personality. But, you know, we're not hiring somebody with a personality. We're hiring somebody who gets the job done. And he gets the job done. And he is supportive of our Second Amendment rights. And he's against abortion. And just, you know, the list goes on and on and on.
He's also been called a racist and a bigot and has been accused of helping to fuel the racial divisions in the United States. Things that people, you know, point to your town and say, this is an example of what's been going on in the United States. What do you make of that? I can hear you sighing.
I don't never see any racism going on with him. He just wants to build a wall so people don't come in. I'm an immigrant. I understand what he's talking about because I know what immigrants do sometimes. You know, they come, they rip the benefits and they'll commit crimes and do stuff like that. I grew up around it. I mean, I hate to say it, but sometimes immigrants do that. Not all of them, but they do that.
I mean, one of the things he has done is I mean, and this is a notorious policies, is separating kids from their parents, and there's still hundreds of kids who haven't been reunited with their parents. You see those you see those images of kids in cages. Does that, as somebody who was born in Mexico, originally from Mexico, does that make you rethink your vote at all?
All right, hey, let me tell you something. I was arrested by immigration when I was 16 years old. Okay. I was in Maine. They put me in a prison cell by myself. They separated me from my mom and dad. I was in jail for 5 hours, 16 years old. And today actually released me. So you tell me, is that any different than what it is now? This has been going on for over 20 years. It's not that I'm defending Trump. I'm just telling you that this has been happening for a long time. Mm. The cages and all that stuff, it's been happening before Trump happened. That it's people been exposing this now to the public because they want Trump out of their office. That's different. But you know what I'm saying is, I mean, when I was under Clinton's administration when I got arrested by immigration when I was 16 years old. You know, the thing is, this has been going on. It's just never been exposed.
That doesn't make you rethink your support for him?
No, absolutely not, because it's been going on for over 20 years or so.
When you think of how divided the country is, what is it that gives you hope?
What gives me hope is that we are – there's still people out there that are willing to fight for what's right.
Have you voted already, or are you going to vote on Election Day?
No, I was actually going to do that today.
You're going to vote today?
Yep.
Excellent. I really appreciate talking to you, Freddie. It's good to speak with you. Good luck with the voting. I hope there's not a long line.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and you guys have a blessed day. Tom, say you gangster, but you never pop none. They say you a wankster, and you need to stop running. You go to the dealership, but you never pop none. You've been hustling a long time, and you ain't got none. You say you a gangster, but you never pop none. They say you a wankster, and you need to stop running. You go to the dealership, but you never pop none. You've been hustling a long time, and you ain't got none. Aha! Damn, homie.
President Trump likes to say he's the least racist person around. It's part of his last big push to attract more black voters in the final days before the election. NPR's Aisha Roscoe takes a look at whether that message has gained any traction.
President Trump's closing message to black Americans has been less about him and more about his Democratic opponent. Even when Trump unveiled his second-term agenda for black voters called the Platinum Plan, he spent most of his time bashing Joe Biden. Here's a taste of how he name-checked Biden more than 20 times.
I've spent the last 4 years reversing the horrible damage Joe Biden inflicted on the black community over 47. No one in Washington politics today has done more to hurt black Americans than Joe Biden. He's demanding your support. He should be begging for your forgiveness. He really should be.
Critics say this is more about discouraging Democratic voters than it is about converting them to Trump. The campaign says that's not the intent. Advisor Katrina Pearson says Trump is just making the case he's done a better job for African Americans.
We hear this rhetoric a lot that President Trump, for some reason, doesn't support black and brown Americans, when in fact our president has done more than any other president in our lifetime to help empower and create opportunity.
Bye, Felicia.
Pearson says the campaign has put real resources into reaching black voters. They spent $20 million on outreach, including a Super Bowl ad and door knocking, and they opened 17 field offices in black neighborhoods in swing states. No one expects Trump to flip black voters who overwhelmingly vote Democrat. The message may be getting through to some, especially young voters. The website 538 crunched the numbers and found that support from younger voters for Trump was at 21%, up from 10% in 2016. But that segment of voters is tricky for Trump.
That's the most unreliable part of the black electorate.
That's Theodore Johnson of the Brennan Center for Justice. He studies the role of race in elections. He says older black voters show up and they organize others. Polls also show that they intensely dislike Trump.
To the extent Donald Trump is making inroads with younger black voters, they are more likely those voters who are already going to vote Republican or those voters who traditionally don't vote at all and they're sort of disengaged.
Trump didn't do well with black voters in 2016. He only received 8% of their vote. The only modern Republicans who did worse ran against the first black president, Barack Obama. The new increase in support for Trump may be black Republicans coming home. There is another group that's interested. Trump also polls better with black men. That's why the campaign has highlighted former athletes who back Trump and even some big-name male rappers, like 50 Cent, who complained that Biden would raise taxes and briefly expressed support for Trump. 50 Cent represents the type of black male voter more likely to find Trump appealing. Here's Cheryl Laird, an expert on black political behavior.
Clearly, his monetary gains and his monetary goals outweighs his views on where the black community is or what black people even think of him. And he said so.
And remember Trump's platinum plan? Another black rapper, Ice Cube, helped him work on that. Laird says Ice Cube's involvement helps Trump push back on accusations he's racist. But as for Ice Cube, he told Fox News Sunday that he's willing to deal with whoever will help black people.
You know, my daddy told me a long time ago, no matter who's the president, you got to get up and go to work in the morning and always remember that. So no matter who's the president, I'm going to get up and go to work in the morning.
But even though the campaign worked with the rapper, Ice Cube said they still haven't secured his vote. He said he's still undecided. Aisha Roscoe, NPR News.
Mama says policemen shoot black people.
Is it true?
Is that true?
When Louisville police raided Breonna Taylor's apartment, then shot and killed her, a police officer was also shot. That man has now filed a civil lawsuit against Taylor's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker. The officer claims that Walker, quote, willingly or maliciously shot him while officers were serving the no-knock warrant. Eleanor Klibanoff from member station WFPL has more.
When plainclothes Louisville police entered Breonna Taylor's apartment in the early morning hours of March 13th, Sergeant Jonathan Mattingly was at the front of the group. Down the hallway, he saw Taylor's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, holding a gun. Here's Mattingly speaking on ABC last week.
He wasn't shooting at the ground, a warning shot. He's pushed out with two hands, looking straight at me. I saw his gun. Our postures were the same, looking at each other when he fired that shot.
Walker fired one shot, striking Mattingly in the leg. Mattingly and two other officers returned fire, 32 shots, six of which struck Taylor, killing her. Walker told police later he believed they were intruders and filed a lawsuit seeking immunity from prosecution under Kentucky's Stand Your Ground laws. But now, Mattingly has filed a countersuit, arguing that Walker knew they were police and fired at them intentionally anyway, causing him trauma and mental anguish. The suit says Walker's conduct was, quote, outrageous, intolerable, and offends all accepted standards of decency and morality. Mattingly also wants the lawsuit against the city and the officers dropped because of qualified immunity, the idea that government officials can only be sued for violating rights that are clearly established in case law.
A police officer suing a civilian in court for emotional distress is unprecedented.
Gloria Brown Marshall teaches constitutional law at John Jay College at the City University of New York.
Sergeant Mattingly wants to have it both ways. He wants to be shielded by qualified immunity and also bring an action as though he is a civilian individual who's been injured by another civilian.
She said this could open the door to any government employee suing a civilian for mental anguish or distress caused by doing their job. Steve Romines represents Kenneth Walker. He said this countersuit is concerning to him on another front.
Kenny can be sued for defending himself in his own residence. Make no mistake that all lawful gun owners' rights are at risk, and that should scare everyone.
Walker was charged with attempted murder of a police officer. The Jefferson County Commonwealth Attorney dropped those charges in May, but said there could be other charges against Walker once all of the investigations into Taylor's death are completed. For NPR News, I'm Eleanor Klibanoff in Louisville.
When I stepped out the car, they slammed me. God damn y'all, who got the camera? Who got the camera?
The fatal shooting of a black man by police in Philadelphia Monday afternoon triggered large protests overnight. As John Yang reports, it is the latest police killing in this country in recent months to provoke public outrage.
Violent protests broke out overnight in Philadelphia with more than 30 officers injured.
Oh, he hit a cop! Oh my God, he hit a cop!
More than a dozen people arrested. Cars set aflame.
I was on my way home. This is in the middle of 52nd Street.
And stores looted. Philadelphia City Councilman Isaiah Thomas.
Like so many Philadelphians, it was hard to wake up this morning after seeing so many graphic images of what took place in our city last night. We see these incidents. We recognize that our city has a lot of problems.
The spark, a killing Monday of a 27-year-old black man named Walter Wallace Jr., captured on video. Just before 4 p.m., two officers responded to a report of a man with a knife in a predominantly black neighborhood in West Philadelphia. As Wallace approached the officers, they opened fire.
Oh my God!
He was rushed to Penn Presbyterian Medical Center, where he died. Philadelphia Police Sergeant Eric Gripp described what happened.
The male continued to follow after the officers while brandishing the weapon. The officers ordered him to drop it several more times. Fortunately, he did not, and the officers discharged their weapon several times, striking the male.
Wallace's father said his son suffered from mental health issues and was on medication. Questions immediately swirled about why officers hadn't used a taser to subdue him and why they fired so many rounds. The officers were wearing body cameras. Their names haven't been disclosed, but they've been removed from street duty. In a statement, Philadelphia Police Commissioner Danielle Outlaw said, "I recognize that the video of the incident raises many questions. Residents have my assurance that those questions will be fully addressed by the investigation." This afternoon, a lawyer for Wallace's family spoke to reporters.
That was an unjustified shooting. I think you saw it as well. We all saw it. It's an unjustified shooting. We have a person who has mental health issues. We're going to vet those out as the process continues. But we have officers who I think are not properly trained to deal with those mental health issues.
The video of Wallace's shooting led to protests that turned violent late last night and to vandalism and looting in areas already hard hit after the death of George Floyd earlier this year. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm John Yang.
Living way out. Nigga, go home. Spray painted on your house.
In a last-ditch appeal to suburban voters, President Trump has promised to keep low-income housing out of their neighborhoods, essentially by making it harder for poor people with government subsidies to move to wealthy areas. But moving to the suburbs has never been easy for low-income families. 4 years ago, NPR and PBS Frontline followed several families and a developer trying to overcome some of these barriers. NPR's Laura Sullivan checked back in with them to find out what happened.
Are you the artist's kids? Yes, when I saw you guys, you were little. You were just little.
The last time I saw Ciartis Harris and her kids was the fall of 2016, and they had just become homeless. Harris stood on the edge of a parking lot as a repo truck pulled away with their van. It was where she and her kids slept when they had nowhere else to go. I remember Harris turning away so her kids wouldn't see her cry. Today, she's waving with a big smile as I pull into a different Dallas parking lot. This time, she's standing in front of a government-subsidized housing complex.
It's been like, what, 3 years?
I know. It's been four.
You know, remember, we lost the van.
Yeah.
We never got it back.
What was difficult to understand about the day Harris lost the van was that just months earlier, she had basically hit a jackpot of sorts. She'd landed a Section 8 housing voucher. It's supposed to be a ticket out. And that's what Harris wanted, out of poverty. The voucher pays the difference between an area's average rent and what you can afford to pay. But the dark truth about the decades-old voucher program is that poor people are not flooding into the suburbs. Research shows only 14% of families with kids are able to use vouchers to move to neighborhoods with good schools and jobs in low poverty. Historically, that is. The suburbs. And while Harris called and called and drove around and reached out to every apartment complex she could in Dallas's wealthy northern enclaves, no one was willing to take her voucher.
No, nobody. And it was so painful to finally have, like, oh, get Section 8 voucher, we get a house, we get to move, yay! No.
Yeah.
No, you don't. You get to go and be homeless again and live in shelters and live in, like, hotels and people's houses. And
the voucher couldn't help her the day the van was towed because she couldn't find anyone to take it. And she says in the year that followed, she and her kids lived out of backpacks, scrambling at night to find a place to sleep, washing up at McDonald's before school. Until finally, 3 years ago, one of the last government housing safety nets there is finally caught her, a spot in federally subsidized housing here in a high-poverty neighborhood opened up.
Yeah. What's the last 4 years been like for you?
It's been up and down. It's been chaotic. It's been a roller coaster. So I just take it with stride.
Yeah. Do they like it here?
They do. They like it because they get to play with other children.
Yeah.
They don't like it because of the violence. But
is there violence here?
It's a lot.
Really?
Daily. Crazy. Chaotic. Arguments. Gunplay. Drugs. Like, it's just chaotic.
Ever since Congress passed the Fair Housing Act in 1968, the federal government has been trying to undo a century of racist and unfair housing policies that gave white people government-backed mortgages and literal highways to prime land and redlined African Americans and people of color to urban cores. But 50 years later, while the country is more diverse than ever, housing remains deeply segregated. African American homeownership rates, which had shown some improvement, backslid with the 2008 recession. They still haven't recovered. Now, because of COVID, evictions are expected to skyrocket. 5 years ago, the Obama administration beefed up regulations that granted federal funding to suburban areas that made an effort to open up. But President Trump recently reversed those rules, calling them overly bureaucratic. Without them, housing advocates say moving to the suburbs and building affordable units in them will become less likely. It was already pretty difficult.
The city actually called a public hearing for our property, and about 250 angry residents showed up.
This was developer Terry Anderson 4 years ago as she tried to build an apartment complex that included some units for Section 8 voucher holders near the wealthy Dallas suburbs of McKinney and Frisco. She stood on mounds of dirt with white plumbing pipes sticking up. The project was already months behind schedule, and the community message board was full of comments asking whether there would be background checks for the new residents, whether felons can live near schools, asking why these new residents should get to live in their neighborhood at all. Why is it our responsibility to carry people who can't afford it, one wrote. They haven't earned it, another said.
Our superintendent has been threatened. Police officers blocked our entrance.
Back then, Frisco officials told me the city's opposition wasn't about race or poverty. It was about building permits. But out at the site of the development, I found Terry Anderson, standing outside a rustic modern rental office in the middle of a fancy-looking apartment complex.
I barely even recognized it when we pulled up. You really did it.
We did. We did. We're fortunate. 132 units. So.
Wow.
The greatest thing about affordable housing is it doesn't look affordable.
Sitting down at a picnic table near the playground, she said it's still hard to believe how hard the residents fought her.
They complain about overcrowding in schools. They complain about a decline in property value, and they also complained about the traffic along Westridge Boulevard.
Did any of that materialize?
No, ma'am.
Anderson says there are two things that strike her now that it's all done. One is that the people who lined up for the low-income units were school teachers, daycare workers, a woman who bags groceries at a nearby store, even a couple administrative workers for the city that tried to keep the development out. And the second thing is that except for one guy that still drives around the complex staring at people, everyone in the community seemed to just get over it. The message board died down. Everyone got on with their lives.
Would you do it again?
Absolutely. It's prejudice, honestly, that is preventing the housing from being developed. As an African-American woman, if I can actively engage in changing someone's life more positively, I have to.
Anderson's project was a few years too late for Ciartis Harris and her kids. Harris still wants good schools, parks, peace and quiet, but she's not sure how she's going to find them. Dallas's wealthy northern suburbs don't hold the promise they once did.
Yeah. I think they just ruined it for me.
You think they ruined it for
I think
you.
They ruined it for me. I'd rather go somewhere else where I'm accepted, you know?
It was the middle of the day on a weekday, and Harris's kids played in the street. Somewhere, their school was holding Zoom classes. But Harris's kids haven't been participating. The Wi-Fi doesn't work very well, and the kids are struggling to keep up. Harris's 15-year-old son, Zayden, was down by the curb. He recently found an old guitar and was teaching himself to play. and for a few minutes on this hot September day in a decades-old government housing complex, all the kids stopped and listened. Laura Sullivan, NPR News.
You can listen to and read the original stories of the families we followed on NPR.org. You can also watch the full documentary film, Poverty, Politics, and Profit, from our partners at PBS Frontline.
Giving out the title for that documentary, they said Poverty, Property. They went with all the P's. I just still trying to ponder. Poverty, Property. I forgot the last P. I know it wasn't prejudice. I was thinking it should be racism. But they could have even put the tacky term in prejudice. Poverty, Property, Prejudice. That would have been a good one. Oh, politics. That was it. Politics. How could I forget? Easy one. So, yeah, it could have been Poverty, Property, Politics, and Prejudice. Like the alliteration with the P's, keep that, no problem. Or we just switch out politics for prejudice. Poverty, Property, Prejudice. They don't want to do that. Obfuscate, obfuscate. Context of White Supremacy, Gus T. In for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, the horror day. Saturday, October 31, 2020. So I have been told. This is our weekly compensatory call-in, dial-in. If you have thoughts, observations, especially if you have anything Halloween related to share. Hopefully you got your front light, the front porch light off, so you don't have folks coming to beckon and beg, chocolate please, chocolate, nigger toes, any of that, you know, please. If you have anything related to all of that nonsense, we had quite a few folks talking about how all this was being occurring in their workplace in terms of people handing out candy and all the rest of it. So if you have any thoughts to share on that and or other observations, questions, counter-racist suggestions, the number to dial is 720-716-7300, the code 564-943, pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Poverty, Property, Prejudice. That's not even accurate, but I mean, hey, that would be better. So many things to share. I'm going to go ahead and get that out of the way now. That was so repugnant. And I mean, it's been a really repugnant year from beginning to right now. But that was really repugnant. That was from NPR. Trump stokes fear in the suburbs, but few low-income families ever make it there. See, they get their little, what I call, they put a so-called slant on it. They give you a perspective that is prejudice, bias against Trump, unless you support this. Now, if you think this is great, awesome. Glad to hear it. Keep the niggers out of the suburbs, and I'm glad that Trump is doing this. 4 more years. Awesome. But it might fool you. Listening to this report, especially for victims of racism, like, oh man, that's terrible. That no good Trump. All of that is nonsense. Number one, I think white people know better than I do who's going to win this Tuesday, but whatever. With this whole report that we've got, they ended the black people, the children, class just started, on the Zoom calls, dodging penises left and right. But the Harris children aren't participating. The Wi-Fi doesn't work too well. And then they wrap it up the eclectic white liberal style, put all that in quotes. The Negro child with no Wi-Fi falling behind in school. He finds an abandoned banjo, 2 strings left in it. And he plucks away at a song. And for a moment, amidst the Rona, the election strife, no Wi-Fi, no school, chaos every day, everyone stops and listens. And they give it an HD quality. And I mean, that is about as repugnant as it gets in 2020. And it's been a heap of repulsive activity. Like, white people, I said, white people go and do that, right, all the time. Like, they just have an updated version. Like, you can go back. Didn't they do that in the 1930s? It's been 100 years. They go and talk to the Negro. Yes, you were a slave. Tell us how it was on the plantation. You had to fight your cousin for the last blanket and a kernel of corn. Yes. It was hard. Yes. You were lashed 50 times. Yes. Tell us about that, too. Oh, yes. And then they went around in Watts, right? They go around there. Tell us about why you're angry. Yes. The police beat you. And you can't get a job. Yes. You're stuck here. No way out. Yes. They'll be coming around in 2080. What's the problem? No drones? Yes. No 3D printers either? Right. Yes. Elon Musk won't help? No. You've not been to Saturn? Oh, my God. System of white supremacy racism, it doesn't get any better than tacky. And this whole day is like a big celebration of tackiness. Anywho, we will be here on Monday. That report from NPR, what does Mr. Fuller say? Keep those squatters on the move, right? They'll come and tell Miss Harris, they'll say, it's personal responsibility. See, you didn't do right in high school. See, that's why you are in this predicament. See, you got to come and beg and mooch off of us for some sort of subsidy to come live next to us, as opposed to keep those squatters on the move. This is a part of the plan. You're not going to get to get somewhere and settle down and have great Wi-Fi. Children can go to school, don't have to dodge penises on Zoom. That's not what we planned, exactly what she said. It's been lots of ups and downs. That's a metaphor. That means keep those squatters on the move. Let's see. Yes, we'll be here on Monday. White guests only, day before the election, Dr. Patricia Sias. She is a professor, University of Arizona. Key State, I think, as they call it. She'll be here. She was just in a report. There have been a bunch of them about chaos in the workplace. And so that's what she studies. So we will have a bevy of questions. Anyone, if you have questions about problems in the workplace, strategies for doing better in the workplace, getting a raise, dealing with being bullied, gossiping, anything you can think of workplace related, we will have a white expert on the subject matter. Rolling through Monday, Dr. Patricia Sias, looking forward to it, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Monday, day before the election. And we will be here for the election. As I said, I don't really recall, like, the exact time when they kind of have things together. I think for 2012, it was kind of wrapped up. Romney was defeated before 9 p.m. Pacific. Like, before midnight, they had a winner, and it was all done. I think it might have taken a little bit longer in 2016, and I have no idea. Like, it might be, you know, they've said months, weeks, who knows. But I think we'll probably be on sometime around 10 p.m. Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Pacific that evening, so a little bit later than our normal broadcast time, but I think that's when they'll start giving some tabulations, and we'll see what it do. That'll be Tuesday. Looking forward to it. I would encourage listeners, I went shopping. I tried to stock up on veggies, fruits, things of that nature, and just preparing so that I could hunker down for a good 10 days or so, not have to go outside. I don't want to, you know, I can just wait and see. If everyone behaves, great, no problem. I don't have to shop for a few days, no problem. If it's a little wacky, and I mean, it has been what they said about businesses boarding up and things, it's been like that in Seattle since May, in many areas, especially like downtown. So I'm going to be in the house for at least the next 7 days, and we'll come out and see. One of the cities that they have on their list is having a high probability of criminal activity as a result of the election is Portland. Seattle is 3 hours drive from Portland. So, and we've had a lot of looniness here anyway. So I would encourage, go out, shop. Maybe not today. Wait until tomorrow, maybe even Monday morning. But go out, get some supplies. I know we had some Cows listeners who said that they got a firearm, got some ammunition so that they can kind of protect themselves. But be in the house, bunker down, wait it out. Hopefully everything will be grand and this will just be, you know, hey, we're being safe. Lots of armed white people might be, you know, criminal activity regardless of who is victorious. Many things to cover. We'll share a few and then get to callers. I was mystified. One of the early reports, they were talking about white supremacy racism at VMI, Virginia Military Institute. I was born in Virginia, talked about before, so I'm familiar with VMI, knew a number of folks that I went to high school with who went to VMI and or VMI alumni throughout my time on the planet. And when I was listening to all that, it wasn't that I was surprised about racism at VMI. If they had said UVA, Virginia Tech, any place, that wouldn't have been a surprise. What was a surprise was I thought they said the governor of Virginia ordered an investigation. And I said, that cannot be. The Coon Man ordered an investigation into racist activity at a Virginia university? Like, come on. If that is not the snowflake calling the milk white, I mean, we didn't even, matter of fact, I had a suggestion. If the Coon Man is concerned about college racism, white supremacy, my request would be if they could add one little component to their current inquiry. We never did get clarification. Was he the Klansman? Or was he the black-faced Negro in the picture from med school, medical apartheid? Which one was he? Because we never got clarification on that. If we could get that and maybe a demonstration of him doing the moonwalk, that would be spectacular. Make that an addendum. But other than that, like, the Coon Man has the audacity to come out of the, oh, no, we do not tolerate racism by universities in the state of Virginia. Let me see that yearbook photo again and sit down, Coon Man. Let's see. They spoke with Karen Brown Marshall. I have to turn around. Oh, incorrect. They spoke with, I'll double check the name. I believe it was Karen Brown Marshall. They spoke with her, and she used the term unprecedented to describe the officer in the Breonna Taylor shooting, who is filing a claim alleging that he has been traumatized by all this. He's been falsely charged, and they shot at him, you know, got unruly coons with weapons firing at police officers. We identified ourselves and didn't do anything wrong, and I'm filing a lawsuit. You know, these coons have to pay. And she said it's unprecedented to have this happen where an officer gets to file a claim of this nature and sets a bad precedent for future law. And I said, man, I might have to think. I believe I have heard this before in terms of an officer, probably a white officer. I said, I'm going to have to dig. I might have to sit on my computer for a second. But I believe I have heard or can recall an incident where a white enforcement officer did file a claim of some sort against a non-white person, victim of racism, and saying, hey, you know, they've accused us of racism and charged all of this and blah, blah, blah. And you know, I didn't do anything wrong, and I've been traumatized. Like, I'll have to go back and investigate. I think that might have happened in the case of Trayvon Martin, too. I know he wasn't a public servant, wasn't an enforcement official, but I think this is, yeah, I'll have to go back to examine. I'll say that I'm wrong until I go back to provide evidence. Paying attention to words, I think the word fair was used more times this evening. The word context is generally used at least once a week. It was used this evening as well, but fair, wow. Fair election. 4 more years. I thought it was fascinating. Well, I won't say fascinating. 50 Cent, Ice Cube, Lil Wayne, Kanye West. Last week it was Ice Cube. This week they had 50 Cent. Today they had Lil Wayne. And in the New York Times, like, this is not in, you know, some little small trifling publication. The New York Times and NPR and CNN, like, major publications. We'd had our Global Sunday Talk this past weekend, and folks in Austria were like, oh, yeah, Ice Cube. Mm-hmm. We heard about that over here, too. They were talking about Ice Cube, what a sellout he is. And that's like, wow. Like, they didn't stop and say, maybe we should think about the Electoral College and give a brief history on that. No. Niggas with attitudes. That's what it is. When it comes to Tuesday Night Chaos, and are we going to have to go to the Supreme Court? Is Amy Coney Barrett, is she going to get a say in all this? If I could pause for 1 second, see if I can remember where I was. They confirmed, which I thought they would. That was, come on. Amy Coney Barrett was confirmed this week, suspected race soldier, white woman. They had Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas swear her in. Now, I stopped and looked. I spent a bit more time than I care to divulge, but I investigated as best I could. I think this is the first time that a black Supreme Court justice has sworn in another Supreme Court justice. I think that's never happened before. Not that I'm into Negro firsts in the system of racism, but I mean, I was just like, Clarence Thomas has never sworn in a judge before. Thurgood Marshall has never sworn in a judge before. Like, wow. So when they go back in the history books, right, people, when they do their studies of Supreme Court law and all that, and wow, Amy Coney Barrett, when did she get confirmed and all that? It'll be, oh, there's Supreme Court Justice Thomas doing the swearing in. I said, man, President Trump is clowning like no other. Like, he could have picked anybody else on the court, Chief Roberts, anybody, right? Justice Sonia Sotomayor, he could have got her, right? And got a double whammy, Ray. I got a female and a non-white person, right? No. I'm going crystal black. Yes. Justice Thomas, come on out here and do swearing for clowning. And I think that was just a few days after he spoke to Ice Cube, and then he got a selfie with clowning all the way. And then they add on to that, if Trump wins, the black male, niggas with attitudes, Lil Wayne. Like, wait a minute. I thought this was, I can't even, like, it's hard for me to even take that serious. Like, now, wait a minute. You all spent billions of dollars, I thought. They got campaign advertisements. They've been talking about this for, like, years. They talk about who is going to run for president. What are we going to do? And the debates and all of this. They had just had debates and risked the Rona and all the rest of it to tell me Kanye West might tip the scale on this one. Kanye, Ice Cube, like, man, tell me something, like, at least tell me President Obama, like, okay, he's going to use his connects, and that's a tricky nigger, and he's got a white parent, and blah, 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 and Michelle Obama's going to get involved, and okay, he's going to really mobilize black people to get out and vote, and you know the niggers love that coon, and blah, blah, okay. Ice Cube, Wheezy, Yeezy, man, I'm wounded, black misandry all the way, and then they had tons of articles coming out, just, we gotta go get a black political expert. I almost did a rewind on that one, but I looked and it was a victim speaking, so I didn't want to make it seem like I was mocking her, but I said, an expert in black political behavior? What does such a person, like, is that on your resume? Like, that's my title? I am an expert on black political behavior? I will be glad when this is done. I'd said before, like, speaking of tackiness, election season brings out some of the worst in terms of tackiness and blaming black people. Like, oh, we can't even get the dog catcher elected in a black town. And they'll come and blame us for the election? Like, really? It's my fault? Woo! Cube and Wheezy. Let's see. They said, I'll get to the metaphors, but last thing before the metaphors. They said, because of COVID evictions, evictions are skyrocketing. This is when they were speaking to Ms. Harris and her family, black people. Well, I said, that's not true. That is not accurate at all. We just had a victim of racism yesterday corroborate. I saw this in the news. It's not just me listening to random anecdotes. But she just confirmed. She said that some of her white colleagues were complaining. The problems that they are having is not that they're out of toilet paper, not that they ran out of hand sanitizer, they don't have spotty Wi-Fi. I think that should be in the word guide. We shouldn't say spotty. They don't have poor Wi-Fi where the children are missing out on Zoom conferences. No. Their problem was if both white father and white mother have to work at home, we must upgrade and get a larger house so that we have more room and can stretch out and work comfortably on our Zoom calls and sending penises. That was their problem. As I said, there have been reports to corroborate big booming house market. Who's buying houses? Black people can't even use the vouchers, so I guess it's not them. So who's buying all these houses? It's not that evictions and the Rona is not causing the evictions. It's white supremacy racism. Usual suspects. They find different ways of getting away from that. So I said, but that documentary, they called it Poverty, Property, and Politics. Whole time I thought they were talking about so-called segregation. Poverty, property, prejudice, at minimum, if we want to be tacky with the alliteration. Anyway, for this program, I say white people do things like that all the time. They will say, we're going to have a just election, regardless of who's the victor, Biden, Trump, whoever wins. It's going to be done fairly. They can say justly. No interference. This will be conducted appropriately. We will make sure of that. Just fair. It will be conducted fairly. Even if I was a white person, if I was a suspected racist, that might even give me pause. Like, I'm gonna be up Tuesday night to pay attention. Like, I don't know. They said a dark truth. I don't know what that is. Is there a white truth? Is there a light truth? Is there a high yellow truth? A red bone truth? Like, what in the world? Like, come on. And it's always pairing dark with something dastardly, vile, where we're going to suffer, want to avoid it. It's not a dark truth. It's something spectacular where we're going to feel good. Dread. For this broadcast, if we could be mindful of that and not use metaphors, race soldiers also will take two entities and insist that they are exactly the same. Do this all the time. Do this with people, entities, victims of white supremacy. We have been exposed to this misconduct, so we are still learning. Hey, myself included. And sometimes because we're still learning, we haven't come to a conclusion. We don't have all the information that we need, which is no problem there. But we will substitute, since we don't have the logic, we'll substitute an analogy, metaphor, simile, whatever it is. Frequently, that just produces more confusion. If we could be specific, precise with what it is we want to say, that would be appreciated. I will prompt about the metaphors. Again, if folks have any commentary related to the so-called holiday, please share. And or if you have election-related commentary, you can share that as well. If you think you're going to go physically to the polls, if you've already submitted your ballot and everything, if you have commentary on that, and or just thoughts about the election. Again, we should be here Tuesday evening, but if you don't think you'll be awake at that time, feel free if you want to give thoughts, probably last moment to comment, who you think is going to be victorious or what might happen. Could we see some violence regardless of who wins, that sort of thing. Feel free to share. Number again is 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you could take about 5 minutes to share your thoughts, just to make sure everyone gets at least one chance to speak. If you have additional questions, thoughts, no problem. Just make sure that everyone gets to speak at least one time. And then you can rejoin, share your thoughts, questions. We should have ample time for folks to participate. Also, if you know you are in a noisy environment, if you are at some sort of pre-election bash and they are getting rowdy for Biden and Harris, cool in the gang. Just see if you can kind of sneak to a quieter area, unmute, then you can share and then mute yourself again just so we don't have to compete with a lot of unnecessary background noise. Much obliged. With all of that, first few folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have thoughts to share, predictions on the election, as I said, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Mo in Dallas.
Greetings. Thank you, guys. Greetings, listeners and callers. I thought it was interesting that I believe, I'm not certain, I heard a dead cat received a voter's registration form. I had to write that down because maybe I was in error when I heard it. But a dead cat, I don't know. Like, that sounds like a crime. Like, I don't know how you could end up, I don't know what sort of documents you could fill out to where your pet would be even classified. When I filled out my voter's registration form, I had to put my state ID number, social address, thumbprint, picture of myself. You know, there's a lot of personal human information, so I'm not certain how they ended up making an error and sending a cat a voter's registration form. A biker granny in Florida says that her news outlets weren't conservative. They were the truth, and validated that by saying she used to be a Democrat. I wonder if she had switched from Democrat to Republican before or after Obama. That was just a personal thought. The town founder who was getting a mural in his honor, they were talking about how he invested money in schools, restaurants, textiles, flower pots, goldfish, spoon feeding babies, all of these things. And, oh, he happened to own slaves as if it wasn't the source of his income. I thought that was very misleading. And it just shows that they belittled, if you ask me, how he was able to acquire so much wealth. And they kind of just make it a sort of inconvenient occurrence that he happened to own people in that segment. My personal something I would like to bring to the program. I saw a news segment of a Houston female victim of racism. She received 11 cosmetic procedures to make herself look more like Senator Kamala Harris. The augmentations were she received a cheek and neck alterations, upper and lower eyelid lifts, Botox and cheek fillers, 4 different liposuction procedures, inner thigh, outer thigh, hips and buttocks, a breast augmentation, a tummy tuck, and abdominal plasty muscle repair. I just thought it was interesting because VGQ, you know, I'm not here to slander this victim in any way, shape, or form, but I just noticed majority of her friends, it was like maybe 20 to 25 people outside of the hospital, the majority of her friends were white, and I mean like 95% of them. And it was an enormous amount of resources wasted. The news program, which was, you lost time for constructive disbursement of constructive information. They wasted medical resources, no telling how many pairs of gloves and masks, money. There was very little social distancing. You could be a super spreader, and she was, and at the end of it all, she did not, in my opinion, look like Senator Kamala Harris. She looked different, definitely, and she got a lot of kudos for it, but it was very interesting to see that unfold. And that's all I have for that. Be my line.
Much obliged. Mo in Dallas, you did hear that correctly. A ballot being sent to a deceased kitten. Now, there was a different female speaker who said that someone's canine, white dog maybe, got sent a voter registration card, so maybe not just one pet. Make of that what you will. I don't know if they got MAGA collars or what. Anywho, the surgery component, like, wow, that. I thought they have, like, the Hippocratic Oath and all that about do no harm. Like, I would hope there would be a conversation, like, we're in the middle of the Rona and this seems maybe unnecessary. Like, we're in the middle of the Rona, if nothing else. Like, we don't have an infinite amount of gloves, and we will need gloves to make you look like Kamala Harris. So maybe let's wait at least until the Rona is done, and then we can get around to doing that. Like, maybe we can wait until after the election at least to see, because if she doesn't win, you might change your mind about this whole procedure, right? Like, woo, man. And that racist man, racist woman are most to blame for all of that. If I don't know if the physician who participated in all that was a white person or not, but I suspect it was.
Yes, he was.
There we go. So fine. That would be one at minimum for even allowing such a procedure to continue. But I also, one of the first thoughts that came to mind, $1 billion industry, all of that in terms of skin bleaching and getting individuals who are classified as Asian to do the surgery on their eyes and just all of that, the damage that has been done. That's why Dr. Welsing talked about black self-respect. Black self-respect. That is what can happen in the system of white supremacy when self-respect has been annihilated. But yeah, the skin bleaching and all that, that was one of the first things that I thought of. And Kanye West's mother, she passed away in one of those surgeries, unnecessary surgeries. Again, victim, but I mean, that is the type of damage that the system of white supremacy does to non-white people worldwide. Other folks dialed in, hand up. If you have commentary to share, proceed.
Can I add one thing? Oh, I'll be quiet.
You can go ahead. I can wait if you want to add something.
Earlier in 50 Cent, supported Trump. I would just like to, from my understanding, I think this is from a white woman. I think Chelsea Handler. She convinced him to switch. I think if that's her, it was one of his exes, white woman. She convinced him to switch back to the Democrats by offering herself to him. I would like to just, so you, if you haven't been informed, I would like for you to be informed. 50 is supposed to be back with white now for the contributions of his white female ex.
Much obliged. Rob in SoCal, thank you for your patience.
Greetings, Gus, listeners and callers. So as far as the horror day, I did go to the plantation today, and I guess my observation would be is that the quote-unquote non-white Asians really get into the horror day. Like mostly all of the employees were dressed up as someone, and I did notice, similar to people that classified as white, like it was an opportunity to dress up like a black person. I did notice that. I live in downtown San Diego, so I'm surrounded by bars. And a little while ago, while we've been on the call, I heard the that bell ringing that's on the Purge movie. I did hear that sound, and that was a little weird. And as far as the election, someone brought it to my attention. As far as voting goes, they said, why, like with something so important as like electing a president, why are we going with such an old method as far as like using the U.S. Postal Service, like mailing in the ballot? And why isn't there some type of like application, like with all of the technology that we have, like facial recognition, and you know, we use our cell phones to access finances, and you know, like our cell phones are even protected under the Fourth Amendment. Like there's so much information in there, like the police officers need a warrant or, you know, like authorization to actually go into your phone right now at this point. So the person that brought this to my attention was like, why isn't there like some type of application where you can just vote for who you want to vote for? And I thought that was a very interesting observation, because the mail system can be labeled as inefficient very easily. You know, so like in the clips that you played, I think it was Mania that said it counts when the, you know, like not the vote count, but actual counting the votes. So that'll be something interesting to pay attention to. And last point, as far as like the black males that are being highlighted, as far as quote unquote supporting Trump, I can see a lot of non-white people, not necessarily black, but maybe some black people too. I can see people voting for Trump. And my observation, people, very specifically black people, due to COVID or the unemployment or whatever it might be, you have a lot of people that are seeing financial gains at this point in time. And if, you know, like one is kind of just looking like just observing his surroundings, one might come to the conclusion that Donald Trump is responsible for their financial gain. And thank you for taking my call.
Much obliged. Rob in Wisconsin, that is an important point about the so-called horror day.
San Diego, sorry.
Rob in San Diego, habit. But that is an important point, what he said about the so-called horror day, that many folks, even some victims of racism, non-black, non-white victims of racism will use this as an opportunity to mock black people. That is very common, like worldwide, has been for years. I mean, it's just the reasons abound why I would not participate in any of these festivities, but that is a big one. You will see that people that would not hire a black person to change a roll of toilet paper for their company or anything, but Halloween comes, oh man, they are, that's the Coon Man, Curtis Blow, Michael Jackson, Serena Williams, yes, I'm dressed up, that's my favorite entertainer, yes, Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, like, what in the, very, very common. Hunker down. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, proceed.
Have you heard?
Thomason, New York. Yes, sir.
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the callers. Yeah, I was told that anyone with a Halloween mask on this Halloween would be arrested on the spot. But a surgical mask is totally fine. Just if you have on a Halloween mask, that's this year is illegal. The massive Halloween parade that they have every year here in New York was canceled. The mayor was very adamant about this can't happen, and the white people went, put on their costumes, got dressed up, and held the parade anyway, and no one was arrested. I saw some parents out trick-or-treating today, very, very few. Even though the stores were told if they were participating in the trick-or-treating, they would be fined, but it didn't seem like they followed through on that. In New York, in Manhattan in particular, you usually trick-or-treat at the local stores and businesses. You don't, there's no houses, it's buildings. So, you know, no one goes in someone's building, they don't know. Philadelphia and Washington had very small uprisings over police shootings that led to a very small amount of damage and looting taking place. In the reaction from the Democrats in particular, the Democrat running for president, Joe Biden, is there's no excuse whatsoever for looting and violence, none whatsoever, in a very tough white man voice. I don't recall this reaction coming from the Democrats all summer, with white people looting and rioting and shooting fireworks at police and all types of stuff. None of this reaction from the Democratic law officials. In fact, they decided not to go in and arrest these people. In fact, Portland is still having a riot right now. Since the beginning of the George Floyd thing, it's still in the streets in Portland right now, and no one is getting arrested. But in Philadelphia, in Washington, D.C., some of the brutality I saw from the police arresting people, we didn't see none of this all summer from the police. They stood back, they watched. A total different way that kind of reminded me of, you know, even though I know that they tell us in the news that we didn't have police brutality until Donald Trump became president. We had an uprising in Ferguson during the last administration. And the uprising in Ferguson, the people weren't even allowed to stand in one place. They had to keep walking around in a circle. And then we had an uprising in Baltimore where they praised a black woman for getting out of a car and beating her black son, who the police had cornered off, and these young kids were throwing things at the police to get away from them. And she was rewarded on TV for beating her black son. It's just a contrast in how it's dealt with when it's a real black people are upset and we're going to take to the streets situation, and when it's a coordinated white people coordinate, you know, situation where they're controlling the thing, total different treatment from the politician. In New York City, Gus, I know you remember this story. I'm not sure if you played the clip on it. Officer Michael Reynolds, a New York City cop, was in Nashville, Tennessee at a bachelor's party, staying at an Airbnb. He broke into a woman's house and terrorized her and her sons before leaving. When confronted by, before he left, he terrorized them. And when he was confronted by the Nashville police, he was not arrested. He's a former NY City cop now, Michael Reynolds. He was ordered to pay a $1 million judgment to this black woman's family, who he terrorized in the middle of the night. Federal Judge Eli Richardson mandated that Reynolds pays $1 million to Contese Holly Burton for kicking in the front door and terrorizing the family, all of which was captured on surveillance camera. Holly Burton said she was at home with her sons when Reynolds kicked in the front door and her South Area residence barged in. The video surveillance showed Reynolds screaming, threatening her family and using racial slurs. Reynolds could be heard saying in the video, "Try to shoot me and I'll break every effing bone in your body, every bone in your effing neck," then called them effing niggers. All on tape. It's 8 minutes he terrorized these people. He was awarded a $1 million judgment. And of course, the cop, he only served 15 days in jail for this. And he was charged with trespassing. And he was only resigned due to pressure from the media. Another follow-up was Amber Geiger's story this week. The Botham John family filed a suit unsuccessfully proving the city violated his rights, civil rights. It was tossed out by a federal judge, and they blamed the killing on, this is how they charged it, a practice or custom within the Dallas Police Department of shoot first and ask question later, which appears that in the 1980s, Dallas was brought up on federal charges, and this was what they were trying to push into the judgment. However, that was thrown out. So now they're suing the Walton Residential LLC, the place where he lived. They're saying Botham's death occurred to direct result of faulty poor maintained door and locking mechanism and the confusion with the layout of the south side flat. Where the problem with this is the same thing that Amber Geiger's using in her appeal, that she didn't do this on purpose. It was because the layout of these buildings and how bad the lighting was and all of these things is what she's using as her appeal. So if the John family now wins the judgment, they're pretty much automatically releasing Amber Geiger. I'll mute my line for now. I did have some other things. Thank you.
Much obliged. Thomas in New York. Aren't they about to, like, seasonally, wouldn't it normally be close to them having the big, what is it, Santa Claus parade? I know they have the Macy's Christmas parade, but they have the, like, SantaCon thing, isn't that it? Where it's, like, thousands of Santas, they go out and get drunk and vomit all over the street. Like, it's, like, in the next few weeks, right?
It's soon. It's been canceled by the mayor, but it's soon.
They're going to do that, too. Like, whatever. I don't know what it is, but I know it's sometime soon. Like, it's either in November or the early, but I think it's sometime in November, usually. I don't live in New York, but I know that event. Talk about tacky and trifling. That is another one where NY, New York's finest, they will not be out with billy clubbing. Come here, Santa. We tell you we're not doing the Santa thing this year. Get over here. You're spreading the running. And give everybody summons and beat them over the head and throw them in a cell for the, I don't think so. Same way with the Halloween. And New York, that was one of the places where they were saying, like, hey, we got some racial disparities in how they're enforcing the Rona regulations. If black people are outside, they're coming, hey, what are you doing? We got the Rona. Get back in the house. And where's your mask? And here's a ticket, $2,000. White people are out It's 5,000 of them. They're out with masks on and trick-or-treating and everything. And he gave them a Tootsie Roll. System of white supremacy. SantaCon is going down. You can just watch whenever, and that'll just be a whole lot of white people. And it's just an excuse for debauchery. Like, it's not even like they're out with good cheer, as they call it, and rounding up donations for the Salvation Army. Like, I don't think that has anything to do with it at a, what is it called? SantaCon. I mean, SantaCon. Anyway, the number is 720-716-7300. Decode 564-943-#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Just quickly, the segment that was, they were talking to the folks in Arkansas. Bill Clinton, Slick Willie, they were talking to the folks, and they said, this is the most racist town here in Arkansas. And they said, we found this non-white fella. They did say that explicitly in the report. He's not white. And it's all this hogwash. I've had a grand time, blah, 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 it's locked up. And I said, man, why didn't he ask him, like, you're voting for Trump? Like, what about the black and brown people? What about your black brothers and George Floyd? Like, it's black and brown people. What about all that? Like, why didn't he didn't ask any of that at all. Second, it's very easy to find confused victims of white supremacy. That's one reason why we are white guests only. Most victims of racism are very, very confused, courtesy of racist man, racist woman, racist child. So it's very easy. You can go find black people, like two black parents, four black grandparents, who would say something very similar. Maybe not the incarceration thing, but, oh, yeah. Black people do this and personal responsibility and blaming white people for everything, and there's no racism. And they point out every other black person that gets shot by the police has said something similar, like on their Facebook or Twitter page, right? So, not surprising. I would have found it more interesting if they had went to find some of those white people, because they got video. It was 2020, so they got facial recognition and all the cool technology. Go identify some of those white people that were yelling out, we'll kill you, nigger lover. Go find some of them and ask them, what compelled you to yell? And then show the clip. Yell that you would kill him for having a sign that says Black Lives Matter. Why would you do that? Go talk to some of those white people. Like, I don't want to hear from a confused victim that, oh, hogwash, racism, that's not news. I've heard that lots before. Even though that would be a great time. Man, we're sitting here blaming Yeezy and Weezy. What about the Latino voters? Are they going to vote for Trump? No way. It's black and brown people, right? Four more years. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, lines should be open. Proceed. Saw other folks with hands up, I guess. I don't know if they're waiting to get to a spot. If you're at an election party or something for Kamala Harris, maybe you can get to a quiet spot where you can actually chit-chat, share a word for the other folks who have a hand up. Again, we will be here on Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Dr. Patricia Sias, white woman, talking about politics in the workplace, solving problems in the workplace in general. Looking forward to that. And then Tuesday for the election, Tuesday evening, we will see what happens. We had a listener, she gave a report yesterday for workplace racism. Rob in Wisconsin was talking about being terrorized by support enforcement. And just, you know, they can loot your entire paycheck very easily and ending up being helpless to do anything about it. We had a listener, she wrote in with suggestions. Make sure I get that in. I do not have children. I am certainly no expert on pretty much any matters dealing with child rearing or that experience. So much obliged for the folks, parents and such who shared yesterday and our victim who wrote in for this one today. Her commentary, victim of racism, black female, she writes, "So sorry for the caller with child support issues. I've had a few child support cases and have a couple of quick notes. Number one, for those not in the situation of having to deal with child support issues, I would highly, in all capital letters, recommend they read Mr. Fuller's work on the myriad of questions and issues about relationships that should be resolved before, in all capital letters, entering the bedroom. Racism, white supremacy, racist man, racist woman, racist child, have found very creative ways to insert themselves into black relationships and child-bearing rearing. From what I have seen, their usual entry starts when determining paternity issues or if the custodial parent is receiving public assistance or in divorce decrees. Their power is onerous. Child support debts have a super priority, in quotes, over most other debts, meaning that the debt is difficult, if not impossible, to get out of. Number two, for those facing child support issues, and B in Toronto mentioned this, there are attorneys who specialize in handling child support cases for fathers. They are a great resource in helping minimize damage resulting from exorbitant child support payments and or jail time for failure to pay. They can withhold your passport for child support. I didn't know that. I got my worthless passport this year, like literally days before the Rona hit the U.S., but I was seeing that can be grounds for them denying you a passport if you have child support issues. Boop. No way. You are not leaving these borders, buddy. Continuing, I had a case where the father's check was garnished after 20 years of not paying child support. The child was an adult by that time. Support people who are trying to change legislation in the area of father's rights. Number three, retired firefighter mentioned this one. Find ways to maintain a relationship with the other parent to negotiate care and support of the offspring without getting the state or courts involved. As Mr. Fuller says, we don't want to get ourselves in situations where we are asking racists, white supremacists to intervene and solve our problems. That is major, like doing as much as we can so that we don't have to involve racists in trying to settle disputes and conflicts. That's why minimizing conflict, I say, no name calling is in the 10 stops for a reason. Seems like that is a priority, minimizing conflict and problems with other victims of racism, other black people. That should be a major focus, something that we are very serious about. Folks who say that, hey, countering racism, that is my responsibility, really my assignment, my cosmic duty, as Dr. Welsing phrased it. But much obliged for the comment. Certainly, if you have any other folks with any input on trying to solve problems with support enforcement, that would be appreciated as well. 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Other folks, we have missed totally. Commentary to share. Proceed. Folks are spectating the eve of the election. Hope you have your supplies and what have you and are ready to roll. If you're sitting quietly in your residence, locked down, waiting with anxiety for Tuesday, I reckon. Again, I would just say make sure you have supplies if you have to go out for work or whatever it is. I hope we don't have too many people that are having to pick up children from a lot of activities and such, but it would be very direct wherever it is that I have to go, there and directly back. Like, not a whole lot else. I would try, if you get to work from home now, great. If you have that as an option, this might be a good week to have, I'm going to take every day and just stay home. Like, I'm just a little nervous about the Rona and everything else. I'm going to hang out here. I'll get my groceries tomorrow for the whole week in advance. I will hang out at home. I can do constructive activities, do some cleaning if there are any projects, get some workout activities that you can do in your residence as well, spend some time cooking, clean the refrigerator. Use that is incorrect use of time and energy. Doing cleaning and things, that counts. Lots of things you can do, and it's only a short time. I'd say this is a great opportunity. If you have offspring or what have you, outstanding. Y'all can do some reading time together, other projects, help out on school, whatever it is, but a great time to do some nesting, as they call it, not out running about on the plantation where anything could happen this here week, regardless of who wins. Let's see. Folks who dialed in, while the folks who have not shared, while they, I guess, get it together, get to a spot where they can speak, if other folks have additional thoughts, questions to share, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Robin, Wisconsin. Yes, sir.
San Diego. So, unfortunately, the situation with the black male being gunned down by enforcement officials in Philadelphia. I heard about that situation before it hit the news. I have a younger brother in Philadelphia. And so the day of the shooting, we talking on the phone. And he was telling me, he was like, man, you know, it's something going on over here. He was like, man, it's like, you know, telling me like about like a huge police presence and you know, people just kind of like out in the street, you know, and eventually he found out what happened. And I can just hear him being traumatized by that event, like, you know, not knowing what to do, understanding in that moment that it could be him, you know, could be anybody. And it was very hard to take in, and then to see it come across and make national news was quite an experience. Definitely. Thank you.
Much obliged, Rob in SoCal. Yeah, it was, you know, I said for a long time, I don't watch the video of those incidents and things for that, you know, what exactly what he just talked about. And, yeah, I did not appreciate even hearing the audio. It's the same type of thing. We're committed. We're in a system of white supremacy, racism. Racist man, racist woman, racist child, they are not going to discontinue the practice of having race soldiers gun down black people out publicly. That's been happening for a very, very long time. They even had Dylann Roof, where somehow they can get him into custody and he can get a burger, but a black person, under any kind of circumstances, we just can't seem to get them into custody without having to shoot at them, you know, 50,000 times. Deshaun Kizzy, remember that one a few weeks back? Like 3 or 4 dozen times that they shot at him. Yeah, but I didn't even like hearing that. That's why I've said you have to, in my view, preserve your mental health. And in my view, I think race soldiers, that's also a part of their plan in terms of producing that type of effect, impact on black people. To show that sort of content and just to kind of have us wallow in them terrorizing us and not being able to do anything about it, to make the whole situation seem helpless, hopeless. I think that is a huge component of how they operate. So, yeah, I think be aware of those situations, but I try not to just sit and binge watch on all that. Like, that is why we need to be really steadfast in our commitment to counter racism and solving this problem ASAP. Other folks who dialed in, comments, questions, observations, proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I was thinking about the segment where they were mentioning that a certain town or something was the most racist town, the most racist city. And I guess they were getting commentary from some of the white citizens in the area. And I think one of the white guys was saying, you just might happen to come across something. I don't know. I couldn't remember what term he used, but I guess he mentioned something about the Klan. So that's an easy example that they like to use as what's a racist, and it can't be the average everyday white person that on the surface they're kind and nice to you. They want to keep it in that example for the racial focal pointing, where it's got to be someone with a shaved head, tattoos, and I think they just recently added alt-right, quote-unquote. They want to keep your attention on those select individuals. And now him, see, just in that hostility where he was saying that, that's, in my opinion, showing that he's a racist, in my opinion. But, yeah, like the most racist places and things like that, I think that's interesting, too, how they don't want to put the focus on actual white people. I thought that was interesting in how they like to go into the conflation of, well, I ran into a black person and he said this to me. They said that to me. They'll start doing that, too. The example of or the segment about the I think it was a painting or some form of art that they wanted to try and take down from a museum, I think. I definitely have been studying how racism is just used in all kinds of products for paints and markers. There's even a term that they use for colors, for the skin tones. It's one company that uses the term nude, nude one, nude two, nude three, like N-U-D-E, for the skin complexion that would be for a white person, right? So, like, why is it called nude or flesh or something that means something pleasant, or it'll be something like quality or angel or something like that, or right, like white is right, but the color will be called right. I've noticed that through the years. Just when you're trying to do a painting or something, this is the color that you're going to try and put with a painting product to market to an artist. So white supremacy dominates everything. And there was a story that happened, I believe, earlier this week with a non-white, non-black person, Asian person, I think, said that he said he was a racist. He asked two black males, like, what are you doing here? And, they said they were just filming. It sounded like it was one of those audio segments. They were just filming something in, I believe, Arizona somewhere. And this person says, yeah, I'm a racist. This is a no nigger zone. I mean, like, dude, where do you get that kind of language? I mean, that's definitely the conditioning of white supremacy. You see a dark-skinned person, black person, you are going to immediately label them a nigger. So the person, I think, was fired from his job or whatever, but I agree with how non-white, non-black people, they definitely have no problem, many of them have no problem taking on
you know, based on the conditioning, having the viewpoint to mistreat black people and label black people all kind of racial slurs and the negative stereotypes and things like that. And that's all I have to share right now. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Much obliged. Caller in Florida. I saw that report, the white fella saying this is a no nigra area, sundown towns. I was even reminded when they were talking about Miss Harris, they were talking about the suburbs that didn't want her around. Like, we read about that in sundown towns. Like, Dallas has the suburbs, its park. I think Highland Park is one, and there's another park name, but they have all these suburbs. I don't even know if they're around, per se. They might even be apart, where they drift over into the Dallas proper, like city limits, but they're really, really close. But they have these white exclusive areas of, like, housing vouchers. Get Ms. Harris out of here. One more years. But, yeah, that is very, very common. System of white supremacy. Same thing with the names for the paint, I reckon, or whatever it is, if it's going to be paint or whatever other products, the racist naming in the products, that is super widespread in the system of white supremacy. That's another one where, just in my view, it shows where the focus is in terms of, I've said, how you compare things, how we relate things. That's what I'm familiar with. That's what I'm thinking about. Classification on the basis of skin color, really mistreatment on the basis of skin color. That's what I'm familiar with. That's what I know. So that's the way we'll just apply that to everything. We're going to practice racism and everything. So we just, you know. But yeah, much obliged. Caller in Florida. Number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks.
Guys?
Yes, sir.
The other park in Dallas is University Park. I wanted to give you that information. It's Highland Park and University Park. And as far as Section 8 in Dallas County, I've noticed a lot of times they'll push the black residents who receive those housing vouchers either south to places like DeSoto and Duncanville. Those are like the suburbs. Those are the main suburbs that they'll push people who, and quite honestly, those are the quote unquote most safest areas that'll honor those vouchers. If not, like if it's in the Dallas city limits, or you know, in Dallas city, you know, in the city of Dallas, it's a lot of times in the southern part of Dallas. Where it's a lot more, or it's a lot more condensed in with black people. That's all I had.
University Park, that's it. University Park, Highland Park. I knew it was two parks, and that we taught all of that is in sundown towns. That is not top 10, but it's way better than Cased. The trash that, well, I shouldn't say trash. It is. Woof. I will try to not to call it trash.
It's trash.
I'm trying not to. Man, I was trying not to, but it is really, really bad. Like, second worst book ever. Like, woo. Sundown Towns is way better, and that's one of the reasons, like, information like that, that help you understand why is Ms. Harris having problems? Saying that she was trying to get out to University Park or Highland Park in Dallas. What? Oh, yes. No niggers allowed. Got it. Yes. But yeah, that's the whole Dallas. And they have the audacity to say that they feel bad for the Cowboys fans and poor old Jerry Jones, because the team isn't doing so well this year. Poor old Dallas fans. The Cowboys. And can't even do Cowboys and Indians anymore. It's got to be the Cowboys and the Washington football team. Terrible, terrible times. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, commentary to share, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to all of the listeners and callers. I'll start off with my weekly report of have it might be considered to be an unusual situation with I have been in long correspondence with people that I literally grew up with. And what I mean by that is some of them since kindergarten through all of the grades from 1 to 12, and even graduated from college with them. And one in particular, I read his Facebook reports, and as everyone knows, it is very popular with this particular election for various reasons. Not everybody, but a lot of people have a quote-unquote opinion and are willing to express it publicly. For the most part, it's critiquing or criticizing a non-white black person. Not a whole lot of criticizing of white people in general. Maybe one white person, that's the present president. And in this case, it primarily is criticizing, and what it sounds like disparaging non-white people. In this case, I'm pretty sure most of us know about the popular report on several non-white black males, and they identify them as rappers. I'm sure in a lot of their weekly based activities that they're not rapping. It's maybe one thing that they do in order to make a living on that they, you know, get compensation for, but that's not generally the whole scope of their lives. But nevertheless, I think most of us know what I'm talking about with the rappers 50 Cent, Ice Cube, several others. Anyway, in this particular case, the person that I grew up with, it was stating that they, quote-unquote, and this is his quote, they do not do anything for the black community. So I just sent to him personally a couple of questions. What do you mean when you say their community? And things of that nature, you know, as far as asking questions, you know, to him. It was interesting on some of the answers that I got. It would take too long to go over that. But other than that, DCS program had a session this morning and afternoon. I was en route to find out that I had problems with my vehicle. So, of course, priority would take it to where if I had to deal with the vehicle and was able to switch to another vehicle and proceed to the program itself, albeit a little bit late. We, as far as from a program standpoint, a curriculum standpoint, we encourage, because we split the two groups in half. You got 7-year-olds as young as 7-year-olds up to the oldest ages is something like 17. So we, it's kind of like, you know, to the 17-year-olds that you won't get a maximum amount of input on their part if they're linked directly up with the 7-year-olds. So we kind of like separate the age groups, so to speak, with the older fellas together and the younger fellas are together. Now, most of the quote unquote mentees are not there on a voluntary basis. Basically, for the most part, for whatever reasons, I would say primarily it is the mother that has seen something in their male child to whereas they would be interested into having older males such as myself. That's the only difference I think I am between myself and somebody who's 7 years old. I'm older. That's a fact as far as in terms of age. And they will want something that I may have some understanding of to share it with that 7-year-old, that 17-year-old, and vice versa. One of the things that we ask them to do is to, I'm looking at one paper that says to write down, who are you? You know, to get an idea about, you know, the person being able to express themselves. And what we do once we get that report that person wrote, we ask them to state it in front of the, you know, small group. And we try to encourage, especially the older fellas, because the young ones, they are, you know, quite vibrant, about expressing themselves. They're always asking questions. The little ones, the seven-year-olds to 10-year-olds. But once they get around the teenage age, like I said before, it's not that they volunteered to come to the program. So basically they basically stay quiet. They answer questions in a one word, that sort of thing. But if you are asking them to speak on behalf of themselves, that's probably is going to encourage them to have a much more longer dialogue as far as expression is concerned. And we also are trying to get them to speak loud and in a constructive vocal manner so they can be heard literally volume wise as well as what they have to say, something constructive. The program is even concerned about things that, you know, a lot of people think is kind of like mundane, such as dress code, hygiene, and grooming. We talk about things of that nature. Of course, there has to be rules because just about everybody is strangers to one another at first. So there are certain rules about, and it's some of the things that actually that we practice on the cows, you know, as far as no profanity. The hand, you know, use of profanity, it ends up something turns into something that used to be constructive, it turns into a negativity very quickly when something that is identified as profanity is used on a common basis. We also have a sheet. I'm just turning over sheets and whatnot as far as support of the care group. You know, there's such things as work that needs to be done, whether it's around the house, whether it's with that person's bedroom itself. You know, mom may be tired or even dad may be tired coming home and whatnot. Okay, well, if somebody needs to wash the car, then why don't you do it? You know, as far as that concerned, that's probably for the most part with a little older young person. Those are some of the things that we talk about. And you pick about three or four of them each weekly and write them down and report that on what I did you know, at the house, that sort of thing. And that's basically what the program basically is about. The only thing about it is I remind them that I am not perfect. You're listening to somebody who is not perfect. I don't know everything. But if it's something that I don't have a knowledge of, I will go about the means of finding out the answer and sharing it with you. And that's basically what goes on into the program on a daily basis. We get them at 9 a.m. in the morning, and they stay with us on the campus of a high school in Miami-Dade County Public Schools. In the library area. So they're, I mean, full of books all in the place, you know, as far as they're concerned. And we keep them until 4 p.m. Of course, you know, with the COVID-19, we have to be very adherent with that. You have on the, in the program itself, two retired, firefighters. Mr. Clark is a retired, firefighter paramedic. And, you know, so we definitely have a medical understanding of safety in that light, even before the pandemic became a popular thing, as far as, you know, how to separate yourself from a disease or a pandemic or something like that. And we also, you know, are pretty strict with it. And we also feed them a brief breakfast in the morning, which literally is nothing but some sort of juice, something real light in the morning. And then we have like a lunch period. And, by that time, in around 4 o'clock, stuff like that, that's when their parents come and pick them up. But that's basically what goes on. And, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter, job well done, working with the young folks, trying to be constructive, share some constructive tidbits with them, even in the midst of, you know, all of this, like, job well done. There would be a reason an attempted parent would, volunteer their offspring to hang out for hours at a time on a Saturday, so job well done, you and Mr. Clark as well. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, commentary to share, black community, that's a great question. But other folks who dialed in, if you have a comment to share, lines should be open. Proceed. Thomas in New York.
Yes. So I can't keep my phone from dropping calls, but that's the problem. The irony of Joe Biden needing to campaign a couple days before the election in Michigan, trying to get the black vote, so he brings out Barack Obama. And I saw on YouTube a few black people holding up signs, talking about the water, that so they're still in the water crisis, you know. They bring Obama back to Michigan. I don't think that's going to carry well for them. Question that baffled me was, how did we get a conclusion of the Breonna Taylor case and still haven't heard anything about the Ashanti Jefferson case since March? I mean, May, when they announced that her house was vandalized and her possessions were destroyed, that was the last thing I remember. So I started looking into it, and they posted yesterday. This week they announced the trial for next August, I think August 28th or 29th. Almost 3 years later, while the police officer Aaron Dean walks free on a $200,000 bond. And according to the city of Fort Worth, Texas, the COVID-19 pandemic has caused a delay in the trial and legal proceedings across the state, and social distancing and other safety precautions have made in-person trials difficult. So this is why it's being pushed back. I don't believe that that's why they're pushing this back. I think they see all this social unrest, and the last thing they want is the focal points to turn down to the Fort Worth area. I was watching some of the former president's speech, and pretty much just looking at his style of speech, and as great a speaker as Obama is, there's limitations to what black people can be in this country, even though he was the president. But one thing black people can be in a system of white supremacy is the victim. White people are always the victims, the heroes, and the villains. In particular, because Obama gives his speech, it's a lot of preacher cadence, I've noticed. When Trump gives a speech, he's able to play between the victim and the hero. You know, I opened the economy, I did this, I did that, and I'm being treated so bad by the news, I'm being treated so bad. He's able to be both the victim and the hero in the same speech, which, you know, it draws the emotion out the crowd. You know, they're praising him for what he did, and then as soon as he talks about his victimization, they start booing the people victimizing him, and then he brings them right back up to praising him. It's just a tactic I noticed that black speech givers can't do in a system of white supremacy. I'll be wrong, I think.
Water situation in Flint ongoing. They say wash your hands. Last 10 minutes or so for the broadcast. Do not wait till the last moment. If you have a question, thought you would like to share, do we have any folks who either you are going to, like you are certain you are going to vote in person sometime between now and Tuesday, and or you have already voted, you have cast your ballot? Do we have any voters with us in the presidential election and or on the local ballot?
Can I ever heard?
Retired firefighter.
I've been seriously thinking about going with the idea in mind, primarily just to vote for one person. It's a guy that I coached with. His son was one of the few quarterbacks that played at University of Miami, Ja'Cory Harris. I actually coached with his dad, and he is vying for the mayor, the next mayor of Miami Gardens. He's vying. They actually had a prior election, but it went into a what they called it, a runoff, where it's like very close between himself and another candidate. The other candidate is a black female. I just can't think of her name right now, but I was thinking about going primarily just to put a check next to his name. You know, a lot of stuff I leave blank. Actually, a lot of stuff I leave blank on the ballot itself, and most of the stuff that I do act on with that pencil is something that's primarily local in the city of Miami Gardens. Yes.
See there? Leave it blank. See, they'll say it'll be no count. Black males just like you be reason that we get 4 more years of President Trump. Too lazy to even fill out the whole ballot. Disgraceful. That's what they'll say.
Yeah, probably will. But they, you know, I would like to have a question and answer with a person directly. But I haven't had that position yet. I haven't. I would have some questions to ask that person if they have a problem with it. Give me some historical background on where it solved our problems. And don't help them with the answer.
Let's see. Any other voters? Either you are pretty sure you're going to, or you already have cast your ballot. Maybe folks know no voters this evening for the compensatory call-in, perhaps. We'll check in again when we're here Tuesday evening to see if folks voted. If that's the case, I guess if Trump wins, then they'll definitely say, yeah, no count, apolitical cows listeners. See, you just don't even care. Nihilists, that's what they'll call it. Nihilists, you know, they're not even vested. Just sit out and be apathetic about everything. And that no count Gus saying, 4 more years, so you should have been enthusiastic and supported Kamala Harris, Sister Harris, and Brother Biden. Yes. Again, we'll be here Monday. Dr. Patricia Sias, white woman, will discuss politics in the workplace, workplace friends, Zoom conference, safety, all of that good stuff this coming Monday. White woman will be on the cows, always grand to chat it up, get some questions in about racism as well. Other folks have any other comments they want to make sure they get in before we get ready to wrap things up?
I hope that we do have a year where they can blame black people for not going out and vote. You know, that's what I want. You know, this time, I want the Democrats to even win the white woman vote and still just blame us for it. Blame us for it all. So next time we have a list of things we want done, they can take it a little bit more seriously. I'll move on.
When former Vice President Biden said they were taking Ice Cube seriously, they just wanted to wait until after the results of the election, and then they can get back to him on his program for black people. But yes, we shall see. Any other folks with any comments they want to make sure they get in before we conclude? Soon folks are good. I will only say again, we kind of made it mostly. I guess if you're on the West Coast with me, it's, you know, barely 9 p.m., so we have a ways to go with the so-called Halloween evening. Man, be safe. I do not plan on leaving my front step anytime soon, certainly not before sunrise. Be inside. And I would say do it tomorrow. If you groceries, anything like that, if you don't have it already, get it tomorrow. And I would say shop. Think like I might need to be in the house until next Sunday. We had one of our listeners, I think Mo in Dallas, said, heard the purge music. The purge siren. That was a little scary. Absolutely. Now, they could just say, oh, that's Halloween. Yeah, having a little fun, and that maybe that's somebody's Halloween costume. They got those masks and all from the purge, even though that would be a bit, you know, talk about those New York laws, you know, ticket for having a mask on, Halloween mask on. But it just, for many reasons, I would be all about hunker down. Like, I'm not trying to be out in public and hoping that people behave and do what they're supposed to do. Like, regardless of what happens election day, I strongly suspect that there could be armed white people causing mayhem, yelling, criminal activity. We've already had so much of that this year. Why would it not end the same way we've behaved for most of the year? So I would encourage, you know, if you don't, whatever you think you are missing or might need to be able to get you through this week, go get it tomorrow, like Sunday. Go get it Sunday early in the day while the sun is still up. Get whatever you need. That should be right. Brief little window between when everything hits with the election and Halloween. It is kind of, for the most part, done at that point. At least, you know, it's daylight, so the shenanigans should be minimal at that point. But I'd say get what you need, get inside, and then if you got to go out to go to work, fine. But other than that, phew, lock it down. I would tell your offspring the same thing and just be truthful with them that this is, you know, everybody's in danger. I'm not telling you, you got to be some square and just hang out in the house. This is a dangerous time. The same way that we use logic, if there's going to be a big snowstorm, that's not the time to organize a basketball game outside. This is not the time for us to be thinking about other activities that we can do, hanging out, meeting up, even if there was no Rona. Like, let's settle down, make sure everyone behaves, and then we can resume normal activity, or not even normal activities. We can go about the typical business of counter-racism. But, yeah, be inside. I would not take any chances, not even at the grocery store. Might be mayhem over toilet paper or, you know, hand sanitizer. We'll be here Monday, normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Dr. Patricia Sias, and then we'll be here Tuesday for the election. I believe it should be, you know, a little later, like I said, about 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific this Tuesday for the election. We'll watch them count up the votes, as they say. Blame Ice Cube. Anywho, much obliged for everyone's participation. Hope it's been a worthy investment of your Saturday evening. We didn't miss anybody. Everybody's satisfied? Yes? That's what I thought. Got everybody. Thanks for all the folks who participated, listened. Again, hope it's worthy of your time and energy. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. We need our brain computers working in a highly efficient manner. In addition to being sober, let us be buckled every time we are in a vehicle, passenger or driver. I still contend, let's park for a little while. We don't need to be out and about just at the early part of November. Let's hang out. We can clean up the house, get some work done, get some reading done, listen to some podcasts, watch some movies. July 22 is a good one. Lots of different things that we could be doing while we're waiting to make sure everyone behaves once the votes have been tabulated. You can check out the broadcast and tune in. We'll see how it goes and discuss counter-racist logic, watch some of the news segments and all that. It will be a hoot. Get your popcorn and a blanket so we can be warm and toasty as we watch everyone count it all up. It will be so exciting Tuesday evening. But in the meantime, hunker down. Hunker down. No arguments in public. Lots of armed white people. They keep saying that. Like, all year long, they've said armed white people. They're buying guns. They're buying ammunition. No arguments, no nothing, no saving face. Like, anything looks like it's leading towards hostilities, boop, done, out of here. We will camp. That's why I said, like, 4, 5, 7 days, like, thinking I'm going to have enough to be in for the week. Catch you all at the beginning of next Monday, maybe. Anywho, sober, buckled if we're going out. If you are driving, you are not on your cell phone. Same principle. We need to kind of be alert about what's happening around us. And then also we want to minimize the prospects of encountering an Amber Geiger, Daniel Holtzclaw, just doing the little things that we can, not on the cell phone, not intoxicated. Trivial, but little things that we can do. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. No name calling. That is in the top 10 for a reason, or in the 10 stops, excuse me. Can be thought of as a top 10, really. But that is there. No name calling. No name calling. No name calling. No unnecessary surgeries either. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.